It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Richard Campbell's here. I'm in Rhode Island, but we're going to do a great show for you. Coming up, we're going to talk about Outlook and privacy and the terribleness of big tech. Also, what's the difference between Microsoft's Copilot subscription and OpenAI's ChatGPT? And some news about Windows 11, Xbox, and of course, a whiskey of the week. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly. This show is brought to you by Cisco Meraki. Without a cloud-managed network, businesses inevitably fall behind. Experience the ease and efficiency of Meraki's single platform to elevate the place where your employees and customers come together. Cisco Meraki maximizes uptime and minimizes loss to digitally transform your organization. Meraki's intuitive interface, increased connectivity, and multi-site management keep your organization operating seamlessly and securely wherever you're team is. Let Cisco Meraki's 24/7 available support help your organization's remote, on-site, and hybrid teams always do their best work. Visit meraki.cisco.com/twit.
Podcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Richard Campbell, episode 864, recorded Wednesday, January 17th, 2024. Word doesn't respect me. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Miro. Miro is one incredible visual place that brings all of your innovative work together, no matter where you're located. We're talking six whole capability bundles from product development workflows to content visualization, all powered by Miro AI. And, you know, that's really great because it means you're instantly generating new ideas or using the AI to summarize complex information. And with Miro, it's great because every bit of that information is right there on your Miro board. Miro connects seamlessly to the platforms you're already using. Jira, Confluence, we use both. Google, we use Google Docs. It's all there. We use Zapier, Asana. Centralize work in a way that makes sense for your team, because you don't, when you hook up with those integrations, you don't have to leave Miro to update your projects or statuses in any of these tools. You could do it all inside Miro. Miro is so efficient, it's so effective that Miro users report saving up to 80 hours per year by streamlining conversations, cutting down on meetings, who doesn't want to do that, and seeing all the most up-to-date information in one place. Great for teams in different locations or even different time zones because you have one central source of truth. And when it's time to comment on something, don't have another meeting. Record your thoughts with Miro's board video recording feature. It's called Talk Track. You leave your thoughts on the board. Everybody can see what you think. They can respond the same way. Forget meetings. Get Miro. Try it out for yourself. Get your first three boards for free. I love that, to start working better. Miro, MIRO.com/podcast. That's MIRO.com/podcast. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show we cover the latest news from Microsoft. Joining us all the way from the great white north, it's Mr. Richard Campbell
of Hello.
British Columbia fame. He's been running a snowblower this morning.
And this is the kind of snow it might take a branch out and take me out, as take the power out as well. So if I suddenly drop out, I ain't coming back.
Right? Uh-oh. Like, all right. Good to know. Host of Run As Radio. And, of course, the Arctic Front hit McCungee, PA as well. And Paul Thurrott's refrigerator's been beeping all morning.
Yep.
Hey, Paul.
All I'll say is 11 degrees is not a lot of degrees.
Wow. Yeah, it's 17 degrees here. I feel balmy and beautiful. I'm in my
actually,
mom's house.
Oh, no, it's up to 22 now. So we started at 11, but
I waved at Denham as I drove by from the, airport.
How's it doing? To survive an exit.
Yeah. I saluted Bill Belichick as I went by Gillette Stadium. Sure. Gone down by Foxborough.
All the fallen ex-Massachusettsians, the ex-massholes, as we call them.
Ex-massholes. I said hello to them all, and now I'm here in Rhode Island. Which has a
style
of its own.
I love your mother's plantation shutters. I want them so bad.
Aren't they great? Yeah. But you see what they're blocking out, which is snow. It won't be long. Anyway, this is a time to talk about Microsoft, not about weather. And I presume Paul Thurrott and Richard Campbell have some things to say. First of all, we're starting a little late because we covered the Samsung Galaxy Unpacked event and the new S24.
Yep.
Not one word about Microsoft in that event.
Yeah, a couple of words about Google, though, and I think that might we'll get on to that. I think that's okay. I think that's a thing. That's an interesting.
I think
topic.
There might be something to say there. Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, but let's start off as we are wont to do with the European Union.
Well, so let me preface this show by saying we have two highly controversial topics to discuss this week, and then one minor controversy. And as I do, I'm going to try to keep this as calm and measured as it can be. So.
Oh, my.
We'll see how that goes. So I thought you were writing. So I thought you were writing my name in all caps.
I'm writing your name in all caps.
You wrote PAU, and I'm like, oh, what have I done?
PAU, Paul.
No, and then you wrote Paul.
I'm just putting the breaks in the show so you know when to stop.
You're just like my mother screaming at me from the bottom floor of the house.
Paul. Holy.
So the first one is the general topic is that because of regulation in the EU, especially big tech companies like Microsoft, Google, Apple, whatever, are starting to have to either change their policies or disclose information that they would like to keep secret. And because this is a Microsoft oriented show, we will focus on and start with the Microsoft one, if you will, which is that the new Outlook, which is this kind of web app that Microsoft developed over the past couple of years as a replacement for the classic desktop app that ships in as part of Office, is apparently, like in the words of an employee of Proton, a surveillance tool for targeted advertising.
Wow.
Wish I had come up with that one.
But Proton makes their money by selling
privacy,
encrypted email.
That's exactly right.
Yep. So they're not going to be fans of any big tech.
That's true, but I have a hard time believing anyone's going to read this and come away with a touchy feeling about Microsoft or Outlook. There is a dialogue that pops up when you run the new Outlook in the EU, or will soon pop up, that you'll see on the web, you'll see on all kinds of things. Microsoft did not generate this, and the number that I'm about to read is dynamic. It will change as things change. It says, we and 772 third parties process data to, among other things, develop and improve products, personalize ads and content, measure ads and content, derive audience insights, and obtain precise geolocation data, and identify users through device scanning.
But wait a minute. It says we, but Microsoft didn't write this, right?
No, Microsoft did not write this. This will appear automatically. It will appear for other apps.
EU copy.
Right. Thing is, if you go and look up Microsoft's privacy statement, it says exactly this. Microsoft years ago, remember Microsoft used to complain about Gmail and Gmail man and reading email and all that kind of stuff. Microsoft used to do the same thing. They stopped doing that several years ago, maybe a dozen years ago. But
as did Google, we should point out.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. That's true. But they also, that's not exactly when, but Windows 10 was the beginning of major, what do we really want to call it? Tracking, I guess, in Windows. Windows 10, Windows 11 made it worse.
They call it telemetry, as if it's merely checking what you're doing for your user.
So here's what's really happening. Microsoft looked at Google, especially, but Meta as well, and said, you know, these guys are making a ton of money on advertising. How do we get into this?
Why can't we?
And they've been slowly, over time, doing more and more of this tracking and then selling that data to advertising networks, right? So in 2021, I didn't link to it, unfortunately. A Microsoft executive revealed that year they had made $20 billion. I'm sorry, it was $10 billion. And that their short-term plan was to double that to $20 billion just in advertising. And the way you if you're Microsoft, when you own these platforms, is you put that telemetry data in the product. So, for example, when you use Outlook or Windows 11, no, it's not reading your email. But it is looking at your interests and your favorites, your location, your transactions, how you use Microsoft's products, your search queries, the content you view online. We get into this thing,
statements are so vague. Your interests, you're not reading the emails? Like,
right. Your interests outside of your emails, right? You're browsing the web,
The real point is you are giving them this information and everybody, on your smartphone, you're giving them this information. You are.
Right.
It shouldn't come as a surprise to people.
Yeah, but you know, this is like saying, oh, my wife is pregnant. I'm going to have a kid. I know it's going to be really hard. And then you actually have the kid and you realize you had no idea.
You had no idea. You know?
Logically, we live in a world where so many of my readers will say this, like, I know that Google's tracking me, but I don't care. I love Google Maps. I love Gmail. I love whatever. And it's like, I don't think you know, you know, how bad it is. I love those things too. And I rely on them and use them as well. I'm a hypocrite as well. But I don't think any of us, myself included, really have an idea of how bad this is. And I think this EU stuff is going to bring this, you know, to the forefront.
Yeah. An interesting thing in this light, yesterday on mm-hmm. Security Now, Steve spent a long time talking about Google's new proposal for, you know, remember they were doing
Flock. It's not a proposal. They're doing it.
It's built into Chrome.
Yep.
They call it the, I can't, something API.
It's not Manifest 3, but it's a privacy sandbox.
Yeah. And but it's really smart and it's really interesting because they say, we're not going to get the data. Your browser, in this case, Chrome, or presumably any Chromium-based browser. It's unknown whether Microsoft's going to do this with Edge, but your browser is going to keep track of what you're doing and then offer that to the advertisers. Mm-hmm. For an ad. Your browser is in effect going to do an ad auction as you visit a website.
Who gets the money?
So here's the first little nugget of this is available for everyone to see, because when you upgrade Chrome or if you install Chrome, you get this dialogue that says something about ads. And they want you to just click OK. But if you click settings, you can go in three major buckets, turn off all the personalization stuff, right?
Right.
And this is another argument I have with people around this notion of personalized ads. Like, well, they're going to sell me ads anyway. I might as well see ads that matter to me.
Yeah, that's my feeling.
I know, but that's a little short-sighted.
It's not just ads, because we know also data brokers collect this.
Yeah,
when data brokers get it, all bets are off. You know, governments buy it. We know our government buys it. The FBI.
I mean, I think the less they know about us, the better, frankly.
Yeah, because I don't care if Ford knows what kind of car I drive, but I'm not sure I want an entity that has nuclear weapons to know too much about
me. And unfortunately, the dialogue box that would let you select between those choices does not exist.
No.
Right? So,
no.
And this is
kind of
the problem.
You either give it to them, it's all or nothing, right? You either give it to them or you don't.
But. Now, this is an amazing transitionary time that we're in. And so we'll see how these things evolve. But, you know, this new outlook, which, you know, to date, I would say people have kind of hated because it was missing features and it wasn't as, you know, full featured as the original desktop app, et cetera, et cetera. This conversation has shifted pretty dramatically, right?
Is it your sense, though, that this is stuff Outlook always did? It's just now that the EU is mandating this, or is this?
No, I don't think it always did this. So
it's new stuff.
In the sense that Outlook is 17 different apps right across the web and various platforms, the original Outlook desktop client probably didn't do anything like this. Although I'll be interested to see when people in Europe run this thing, if they see this kind of a dialogue for that too.
Yeah.
I think what happened over time was that Outlook expanded to become more things, a mobile client, various web clients, et cetera, et cetera. And as Microsoft got more and more into ads, I mean, look, anyone who doesn't pay for Microsoft 365 can go to Outlook.com and see the ads. But what you don't see, this is stuff they're talking about, the behind-the-scenes stuff. And the question here is, I pay for Microsoft 365 as a consumer. I pay for it as a business. Am I still being tracked on the back end of these services and with this app? Honestly, probably.
Probably.
Right?
And you certainly get why they're pushing to use the web clients so hard.
Yes.
Right? Like,
that's right.
Because it makes them more money.
There's this comes later in the show, but I think this ties into this notion of Microsoft has shifted to this model where they ship products before they're ready. And I think, and we've sort of talked about that in the context of AI, this notion that their AI push is so important to them that they need to get these products out in the world. So we get kind of on that boat, so to speak. And, but they're not just doing it with AI products. And the Outlook is actually a great example of this. This thing's out in the world. It's absolutely not complete. It's been out in the world for a while. They're not going to replace the old things until it is, you know, more where they want it to be, obviously. But, you know, this thing is in a constant state of churn. And I think this is all, I think this ad thing is also a priority for them. You know, Richard and I were talking before the show and he, you know, he said in this, you know, yeah, sure. I mean, this notion that AI is Satya's big moment in the sun, you know, or whatever, just like, you know, Tim Cook may see the Vision Pro as his big, you know, push. But I'm like, I, you know, secretly on the back end, maybe it's possible this advertising stuff was in fact his first kind of company-wide mandate, right?
Yeah.
Because the surveillance stuff in Windows has gotten worse and worse. That the tying of Microsoft, I'm sorry, of Windows and Edge in Windows 11, and the way you can't, you know, obviously there are workarounds, but you choose a browser and it still runs Edge because it hits those back-end MSN start, whatever advertising services. This was a mandate. It's not like if the adults just knew what the Windows guys were doing, they would put a stop to it. Like, no, I think the adults told the Windows guys to do this, right? This is a company-wide strategy.
Yeah, I think I think you're right. And certainly it's in the website. I think moving to the web client was part of that because there's always a certain amount of telemetry and it's just easier to add more and add more and add more. Like, it's this total slippery slope. You made me pull up my pie hole data. You know, one of the things when I stripped down my infrastructure to move to this house is I'm going to run pie hole from now on.
Right.
And it's 13% of all requests are being blocked by pie hole right now.
Interesting.
And when I go and look at them, they're all ad telemetry stuff. Like, it's just unbelievable the rate, you know, and there's only two people that live in this house.
Yeah. So is right. If you tried the new Outlook on your network, I wonder if that would change. It would be worse, right?
Yeah.
The thing is, you know, it was Steven Sinofsky who told me, I mean, a million years ago now, over 10 years ago, obviously, that the vast majority of usage in Windows was happening through web browsers. And the vast majority of that usage even then was happening through Chrome, you know.
Right. But I also think that's what they were able to measure. Like, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. If the only thing you measure, then of course it's the vast majority.
But it kind of puts a dark side to this thing. I've always sort of thought as the web app kind of platform matured that this was the thing that could replace desktop apps. And of course, Teams, Loop, Outlook, you know, it's happening, right?
Yeah, but they're Electron. So they're coding in a JavaScript platform, but then they're running it natively.
Right, okay.
That means that all of those ad network and telemetry can libraries ready to run just fine. No problem. Yeah. Including
Windows
app.
Has in many ways become a host for the web through like WebView 2 or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is itself in Microsoft's world, a host for telemetry, targeted advertising and tracking.
Just make sure that, so you've now nativized the telemetry engines, right? Yeah. You don't have to
which
write
is
new ones.
Really scary, right? I mean, so
they're pernicious for sure, right?
I had a it's funny when confronted by this number, right? Microsoft Outlook, the new version, is Microsoft and 772 partners, right?
Yeah, it's such a good number.
It's funny the reactions that people have to this, because I had one guy who said, well, yeah, but what about I wonder what the number looks like for Google and Meta, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, legit. I wonder about that too.
Yeah.
What did the number look like for Windows 11 or Teams or Edge or, you know, like, I mean, I there's no version of this where Microsoft comes out looking good, right? That's kind of the problem.
Yeah.
And then of course we get to the, you know, where my brain goes immediately is like, okay, well, what can you do about this? I'm going to talk about that in the back of the book a little bit because it's an unsolved problem for right now. Although you just mentioned the pie hole, that's absolutely one approach, right?
Yeah. And pie hole takes tweaking and tuning. Like, it's, you can't deploy a pie hole at your parents' place and not expect to get calls regularly.
That's right. That's
and
right.
So even as technical as She Who Must Be Obeyed is, you know, next door, she's still like, why is this page broken? I whitelisted it for you.
Yeah, you're right. So it's you're kind of whack-a-moling, unfortunately.
Yeah, but at least I'm working the other direction now, where I blocked a lot of stuff and I whitehole exceptions. You know, the junk website that's nothing but ads that's just generally blocked is like, oh, but you like that junk website? Okay, well, fair enough.
Stuff does break though. I use NextDNS on our home.
I do too.
I had to turn it off because Lisa said, well, I can't. You know, we've got sponsors, and their site won't work, and it's like I had to turn it off.
Yeah, yeah, we're gonna get to this. So this is a thing. So this we're not gonna leave this episode solving this problem. That's the issue. No,
and believe it, we're all living in a pretty hypocritical world right now, where a chunk of our incomes are coming from ad revenue.
Okay, except for one thing. So someone brought that up to me, right? So my site apparently triggers this 772 dialogue, except my number is much smaller. It's 100 and something, right?
Right.
Here's the thing. I am not the source of those ads. Nope. I am not tracking you. So, nope. You know, in other words, I am a tiny business that's buying into an ad network. And that's one of the ways I make money. And it's a really crappy way. But unfortunately, with this type of business, it's all you can do. And there are bigger companies than mine that are benefiting from this and doing those horrible things. It's not me.
Yeah.
In Microsoft's case, it is Microsoft. Microsoft is not an innocent party buying into.
No.
We thought this business was legitimate.
Well, is also like we're the ones who want Microsoft to be the kinder, gentler tech giant, right? Like
that's right.
We would like this to be true, and we're just being reminded it's not. They are now the highest valued corporation on the planet.
This is right. It's the yin and the yang thing with in this case with Microsoft, which is that for the past 10 years ish. They have seemed to have what I would have called the moral authority, if you will, over other big tech companies.
Yeah.
The moral authority.
Only because they got spanked first. Well, not okay,
but,
for,
but
I mean,
they
IBM
did. But the reality was, you shouldn't trust any of these companies, maybe. But if you have to trust one, Microsoft would probably be the most trustworthy. I've definitely made this argument.
Sure.
And me too. But now you look at this and it's like, you know what? They're all terrible. And as much as I sort of celebrate Microsoft reexerting itself on the world stage,
like you had a chance to go the other way. Right.
Right.
Because you weren't a play, you know, it was Fang. There was no M. Right.
You got left out of it.
You got left out of it. Now you got to step back in and say, we're different. And you're not. No, you're not. Apparently $20 billion is the price of soul.
There is a price. Yeah, everyone has a price. Yeah. And we learned Microsoft's is in the now double digit billions apparently. So.
Yeah. But it's still not the majority, you know. What the other 40, 50, 60 billion last quarter wasn't enough.
I know. Hey, they just became the biggest company in the world briefly. So you can't, I know. It's awful. It's just awful. And
it's not like you wouldn't have made some of that money being the good guy.
Look, I have all these examples of things that happened this week. I don't actually think we need to discuss them in any detail. There's the Epic v. Apple stuff. Google unlinking its services in the EU, Apple removing pulse ox from watch, which is really just an antitrust issue.
Yeah.
Google coming clean on incognito mode, actually tracking you. Google Cloud allowing EU customers to keep data locally, something they've been working on for years.
And, this all comes from the EU instituting these gatekeeper rules,
right?
And acknowledging, and they're not even legislating at this point. They're just showing you what they found so far.
I know.
Like it's beginning.
Astonishing.
It's the first release.
But here's the thing, here's the problem. So one of the issues I've run into over the past few months, I would say actually, is I've always, I'm kind of a Microsoft guy, but Microsoft first, maybe whatever you want to call it. But I have stopped using Microsoft products and services when there's something better. I went to the iPhone when it came out or whatever, I'm pragmatic as well. Right. We stopped using OneNote a couple of years ago because Mary Jo and I, not collaborate in real time. It was horrible. And of course they had gone to it was a brief moment there where they went to that Windows 10 version of the app, which was wonderful, lightweight, relatively less UI, minimalist. And then they were like, yeah, we're not doing this. And they went back to the desktop client. I'm like, no, I can't do this anymore. So I've done those kind of things. But in recent months, I experimented with and then stopped using OneDrive because of all the crap going on there. I finally pushed after I've done this a few times, honestly, we'll see if this one sticks, but I've stopped using Microsoft Word because it just doesn't respect the configuration changes I made. In other words, it's not paying attention to me. It's just berating me for not doing things the way Microsoft wants because they want that data in their cloud so they can do their AI stuff, right? And AI is going to be the second big one. But, the problem is because those things have happened back to back, right, over October, December, whatever time frame, a lot of people who read my stuff are like, what's going on here, buddy? Are you going to leave the Microsoft site world here? Are you going to leave Windows, right? That's the obvious one, right? And I got to tell you, I use the Mac and the Chrome and Chrome OS fairly regularly, and I very much prefer Windows. I really do. For all the crap going on there, I do.
Well, let me ask you this, Paul.
Yeah.
You think Apple might be better for privacy?
No. So here's the thing. One of the things that bothers me about both Microsoft and Apple is how heavily they market privacy, the privacy protection.
Yeah. Features. The hypocrisy is what's getting
the hypocrisy is incredible. If you, when you sign into Windows 11 for the first time, there's a whole page about it. Oh, look at all these things you can do.
This is why people aren't angry with Oracle. It's like, we're evil. Get over it.
Yeah. They're like, yeah, exactly.
There is an important thing that I think most people don't make the distinction between first party information and third party information. These companies, Apple's a good example of this, act as if we protect your privacy because we have a lot of tools like Apple's application tracking prevention that turns off third party data collection.
Third party.
And that's the thing is, people don't understand that Apple still collects the data. Microsoft still collects the data. And
that's right.
So you're not really hiding.
You can fiddle with Microsoft privacy settings all day. You're not turning this stuff off. I'm sorry. And by the way,
how would you know? You can't see what they're collecting in the first place. How would you know they're not?
You'll never know. Okay, but I feel like Apple, you really think it's just lip service that Apple doesn't?
I can prove it. Okay. I'm more invested in the Microsoft side, but Apple's secret. I don't remember who said this. It might have been Cory Doctorow, but someone pointed out, explain to me exactly how two of the biggest companies on earth have a lucrative deal such that one of them is getting paid $20 billion a year and they never reveal this to anybody.
Right.
Because here's the thing. If you don't change the default search engine, you are being tracked on an iPhone.
Right.
And
because Apple... But you can change it. I mean,
you can, but they don't see that. There's no dialogue popping up saying, hey, by the way, you're getting tracked. You should turn that off because Apple's being paid for that.
Right.
That's how I know. Right. In Microsoft's case, I have more of a,
there is so much telemetry in Windows that is not in Macintosh.
Yes.
Right?
Right. That's right.
Maybe it's a matter of degree, but and I certainly don't think Apple's pure, but I don't.
No, no. Look, I'll just give you a single example because it is Edge, it's Windows, it's Outlook, it's everything. But let's just stick to Edge. You know, when you first run Edge, there's a couple of screens. It makes it sound like they're doing a great thing for you. In fact, all you're doing is opting into more tracking. But if you go into Edge Privacy Search and Services, and this was the big thing they pushed when they moved to the Chromium-based version of Edge, tracking protection. We value your privacy. We will always protect and respect your privacy while giving you the transparency and control you deserve. There's nothing you can do here to prevent tracking. And the reason I know this is because when this product first came out, I put it on the strictest form of tracking, and I searched for a pair of New Balance sneakers I needed to replace. I got them, and then I had New Balance ads for the next 2 months. And so I actually contacted Microsoft and I said, okay, so you guys said that this browser was going to prevent this. Why is it not preventing this? And I got some rigmarole, blah, blah, blah. We can't prevent all tracking. And blah, blah. But the thing is, they were actually causing it. See, the thing you come to realize over time is that when Microsoft says we're going to remove all of the Google stuff from Chrome, from Chrome and call it Edge, that sounds wonderful. But the corollary there, or the other side of that is we're also going to put our own stuff in there and replace it. We're doing exactly the same.
Don't worry. Except we're not as good at it.
Yeah. And that's right. They are definitely not as good at it. So
this was a running gag with a sysadmin buddy of mine. Whenever we'd go for lunch, I would mention a product we'd never talked about before in his car only.
Just
because we were sure that Facebook had the microphone turned on. Like we're just sure. And before lunch was over, those were the ads in his feed. Yeah.
Everyone experiences this creepy, creepy thing.
And so the trick was to pick something like we've never talked about radial arm saws before. So that's what I'm going to mention in the car, right? To make it abundantly clear.
Yeah. No, we all experience this, right? So it's not pretend. It's real. So the thing is, you know, whether it's Microsoft Word or OneDrive, or Microsoft Edge, or just Windows 11, respecting my browser choice, right? Like, you know, it's a pretty low bar when I say something like, what I really want from software that I use or services is for them to respect my choices, right? like, duh. And, you know, when those things don't happen, you know, you try to move on, right? The question is, what steps can we take? This is like, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, there was a big movement in certain circles, like, well, I want to remove Google from my life, you know? And then you come back and look at these guys now, and they're like, yeah, I couldn't really do it. You can't do it. So
wasn't it Kashmir Yola who de-Googled her life, but it didn't work?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, it's like that Kevin Roos was like, I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm switching to Bing. I'm like, no, you're not. No, you're not.
Go ahead. We'll talk to you in a minute.
And he didn't. But so this is we're in a tough spot.
By the way, as you point out, it wouldn't make any difference if you did.
Yeah, so that's you're just letting you're trading one spy for another.
Yeah.
Richard, so Richard in the Discord is quotes is written shareholder value, right? As a kind of a phrase we might use to.
That's our Harvard Business School catch all for.
Yeah, but this
behavior.
Is the insurtification thing too, right? In other words, when a company starts making decisions in its products that make life worse for you on purpose, knowingly violating what you've asked for and requested and demanded, frankly, especially if you're paying for it. That's what this is, right? This is
where is the shareholder value in violating customer expectations?
It's apparently at about the $20 billion mark for Microsoft.
Apparently,
No, because remember, you know, back in the day, we used to talk about like what does it take? You know, the Microsoft of 10, 15 years ago. What does it take if you're inside Microsoft and you want to spin up a new business and have it succeed?
Gotta be a $1 billion business.
It had to be $1 billion business.
That was the thing. That's what Ballmer demanded.
But that was a long time ago, right? I'm thinking the number's higher now.
Oh, yeah.
And look, Microsoft very famously has had a severe case of the Apple envy thing for 20 years now, 20 plus years.
I don't know why. They have such a good business. They sell more than one thing.
Microsoft is not a charity. They could make more money. You know, I mean, now Apple, whatever anyone thinks of Apple, they are a unique company and they do things that other companies just can't get away with. They don't have that same loyalty from the customers, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a special something there that no one can understand, but Google and Meta, absolutely not. So they also less famously have had a case of jealousy toward those companies. Right. And honestly, that is more achievable and obviously because they've achieved it. Right. I don't know that their advertising business is worth $20 billion a year now, but it's definitely above 10, right? And it's in there. And I think this is the baseline. Like how much do we have to make for us to be awful to the people who are paying us to be customers? And the answer is $10 billion or more a year. Unfortunately, right?
Go ahead, bud.
Cory Doctorow is going to be on Twitter on Sunday. I
love it.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to have a lot to say.
Who's the shirtiest?
This is just the beautiful thing about what he's done with this insurtification stuff is that now he can just sit back and say, I told you so. Because everything we come up with now is just another example of it. It's all the same.
It also speaks to a cycle, right? That you eventually damage a product sufficiently that customers move away from it and don't trust more. Like you overcome that inertia.
Thank you. And I'm going
to,
you
get to make a new thing and swing up again and then go back down again.
Well, literally, that's Corey's point. The end game from the point of view of us users is interoperability. We have to be able to move when it becomes so bad that, you know, they're obviously exploiting us. Then we have to be able to move.
Because it's inevitable. Like
this is, this is mobility, right? So a lot of the locks that would keep you into an ecosystem have fallen down. Simple things like being able to move your phone number to a new carrier in the United States, which was, by the way, was almost impossible for a long time.
By the way, you can thank government regulation for that.
Yes.
Phone companies would never have done it.
I have people who are like, over-regulation. It's like, no. History shows we need regulation. This is not over-regulation.
Yeah. Once upon a time, the phone company owned your number.
Yes.
And then it was government regulation says, number is yours.
You have a name, you have a social security number, and you have a phone number. That is collectively, arguably, your identity. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I mean, and I know that shifts over time or whatever, but I have the same phone number I've had since the iPhone first came out, because back then I did have to change my phone number. And that was actually fairly traumatic. You know, and now I live in a state, my area code of the phone number I still have is 617, which is the original Boston or Massachusetts area code. The area code in this part of Pennsylvania is the original one for this whole state, which is 610. Mm-hmm. So when I get asked my phone number in a store or whatever, I say 617, and they go, 61, did you say something? I mean, every single time. There isn't a human being in this state that can get past that not being a zero. Like, you know, because they hear it. They know I'm going to say it. And then I don't. And they're like, wait, what? You know? Anyhow, so.
Actually, I'm just reading the Wikipedia article on number portability. It was created by Siemens.
Really?
Yeah. Introduced because the EU demanded it.
It was introduced as a tool to promote competition in heavily monopolized wireline telecommunications industry. So it really did come from private industry, but it was eventually mandated by the FCC in 1996.
Yeah, in this country, it was absolutely regulated.
It's actually, there are only three countries where there's true number portability, the U.S., Canada, and South Africa. Everywhere else, there's still kind of this gray area, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Interesting.
Well,
it is interesting. You know,
I guess email address would be another one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
You should be able to, and that's been from the earliest days of the domain name system that you could move.
There's technology. Look, for all the encertification stuff, I got to tell you, and you'll agree, everyone will agree with this. I mean, the ease at which you can move between phones, but with an eSIM now, it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
it's instantaneous, basically, right? You do it by yourself. You used to have to go and have like a guy would come out in like an Intel lab suit and be like, I'm going to take your phone into the back
room. And they charge you for the SIM, by the way.
Yes, that's crazy, right? So that's awesome. The other awesome thing that's happens to be in that space is data access internationally, especially for people here in the United States where we don't have that cross-border EU thing, right? So the first year that the iPhone came out, I took that thing to Paris and had it in, they didn't have do not disturb mode. I had to turn off the radio because I was so afraid from those stories you had of people that came back with this much paper from a bill.
In the early days.
Thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
And that was the summer that Paris was rolling out for the first time public Wi-Fi in their parks. And I would go out there like a little beggar and, you know, kind of connect on my tiny iPhone. And I was scared to death. And now I just travel. I don't even think about it. It's wonderful.
It's not a thing.
Wonderful. So they'll screw that up eventually.
I remember getting on a long distance phone call and shouting, "Hey, this is long distance. I can only talk for a minute."
Yeah,
it's like, so expensive.
You were talking to like a metal tube or something. Like,
so expensive.
I know.
Crazy. You don't think about that anymore.
Nope, not at all.
There are some good things in the world.
There are some good things. Right?
I guess we should pause
to rethink of that. I guess.
But in the Microsoft world,
no. Look, there are good things. I guess you know. But
that's why you're upset. If there's nothing good here, we would have walked away.
Yeah.
There's an awful lot of good here. It's just been very shirty lately.
You know what, though? By the way, I agree with you, but I also worry that what we're really talking about is inertia. Right.
Mm, true.
Is there a lot of good here or was there a lot of good here? And we're just kind of used to this. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to walk away from the Microsoft ecosystem. I don't mean it that way. But this is getting a little alarming. You know, the behavioral stuff.
But our instinct still is it's worse over there, right? Like that's our instinct. Yeah. It may be incorrect.
Right. Right.
That's probably just tribalism. And that's probably not real. Right.
Which is, you know, the type of thing I would kind of argue against, you know, if it wasn't me, but now I'm going to support it because, you know, I never make mistakes. I want to be clear-headed about it. Right. I want people to be educated on this stuff. And by people, I mean me. I mean, you know,
even on a show like this, which is about a specific company or MacBreak Weekly, which is about a specific company, our real constituency is not the company. It's the end users. The constituency for Windows Weekly is the people who use products, not Microsoft.
When people come to me and they say, "Man, you're really negative." And I'm like, "Am I negative or are they just doing bad things?" And I'm calling them on it. Like, in other words, if they were doing something that deserved me cheerleading them in some way, I would do that. But I'm not just going to be a cheerleader. Like, no. My God, we have enough of those.
Well, that's what I often get emails from people saying, "Why are you so hard on Apple? Don't you like Apple?" I think Apple sends me those emails, actually. But
Apple deserves more scrutiny. I think Apple needs more people to be that aware of what
they're
like.
And there's plenty of fanboy podcasts and blogs you can subscribe to. And if you just want to have your tribalism reaffirmed, and that's why people want that, that's mostly how humans are. But this is not the place for that. And I guess we're kind of apostate for something.
I would like people to be, I would like people to take that Apple marketing slogan, make it grammatically correct, and actually think clearly, think differently. Don't just accept marketing as some kind of a truth, you know?
Right.
Apple's a good example of the same thing you're talking about. It's not merely inertia, but the ecosystem have value.
That's right.
And having an Apple Watch and an Apple phone and an Apple Mac and an Apple iMac, you get some value out of that. So that's legit. Okay.
So just on that topic briefly, I'll just say one of the things that I don't know if we talked about this. I guess we did. I'm sorry. I talked about this. So this notion of casting and the Zomaticast, and now it's like this kind of standard, but Apple has their own thing and Google has their own thing.
We talked about this last week.
Miracast has its own thing. And, you know, one of the nice things when you stay in Apple, you don't have to know the names of anything. It just works.
No, it just works. As long as you stay in the Apple.
Right. But this is the same conversation that I would have about Google, which is there are these two opposing ideas that are not mutually exclusive. They're horrible, but they're also really good. There are parts of what they do that are just terrible. And then there are parts that are beneficial to you. So those things can coexist. They do. They literally coexist, right? Nothing's perfect.
Well, and in a way, this is true of Microsoft, that if Microsoft were willing to make a pure ecosystem play like Apple does, things might work together better.
So
Microsoft still has this kind of open, we're a platform, and we want to give more value to the people who use us.
It almost screws them over, right?
Yeah. This is part of this is cultural, right? Microsoft came up in the world and became successful because of partners, PC makers in the beginning, right? They became successful in small businesses, work groups, and then big businesses because of partners in that space as well.
Isn't that what Satya Nadella said? Is the definition of a platform is something that makes more money for its partners than it does for the platform.
Yeah, but that's Gates's line originally.
Is that Gates' line?
And it was 10 times. What do you
Microsoft say? Is also the mafia in this situation because they changed the deal over time. This is like Darth Vader and Cloud City. Pray they don't alter it any further.
They just want a taste. They just want a taste.
Because in the beginning, Richard was talking about this last week. We used to have small business servers, right? We used to have a partner ecosystem where they would go out to your place of business and manage the stuff for you. They could do it remotely, but sometimes they would have to show up and they were like this middleman. And eventually Microsoft was like, you know, we're moving to the cloud. Who could better manage Exchange than the company that built it? You don't have to have on-prem infrastructure anymore. Well, that kind of cuts out that whole partner ecosystem, doesn't it?
But also those mail servers were not well patched, right? Like that's where the Hafnium exploit went. It became abundantly clear that
it was a better experience.
They can
users.
Be good and bad. That's my, yeah. I mean, it's nothing is, you know, nothing is absolute, but in the end, what you have is if you are a lot of Microsoft customers now are dealing with Microsoft directly. Whereas in the past there was a middleman, you know, a partner.
Yeah, there's more middlemen than, you know, right? Okay. There still is a partner ecosystem. There's certainly a licensing ecosystem that abstracts a lot of this stuff.
It's just not what it was, you know, because it
is changed.
Now you have,
they've also put a lot more requirements on partners. Like it's tough to be a partner now where they were pretty generous about it.
And that's,
but look, this goes back to the origin. The Gates figured out that if you're in the hardware business, you're a chump. Right. Like,
except that Apple figured out if you are, you're the biggest company in the world.
Yes. That's one of those because markets changed. But his whole idea of sell the languages for everybody so that if you learn a Microsoft language, you can run on anything. Sell the operating system for everybody. So if you can, you know, you learn that, it runs everywhere and they're not bound to any given set of hardware. That was the origins of the company, and they've struggled to move past that. How many times have they gotten into hardware and gotten back out again?
Yeah, because no one can duplicate that thing that Apple did. That was, you know, that is sort of the point of it.
Because it's the anomaly.
I know.
Not even Apple can duplicate it.
It's the exception that proves the rule.
In fact, Apple, they made the Newton. They're now saying, well, the future is not in selling hardware, but in average revenue per user. Services is the future. Now they're a software company.
So average revenue per user is actually a great Microsoft metric because Microsoft, which does not have an appreciable market share for its own PC business and has nothing in mobile, is counting on people to use those devices with their software and services, right? The thing with Apple, though, is that this is like a new business. This is the services business, right?
So, I think it's Apple adjusting. We're not just a hardware company anymore because, in fact, the real problem is they've saturated. And so hardware sales are
diminishing.
It's
a different problem. Their hardware business continues to be successful. It's not that we move to a new Apple because if Apple was a services business, their stuff would have to be everywhere, right? They only want their stuff on. So they have a complementary set of hardware and services.
Actually, that's a better way of putting it. Yes,
And it's a captive audience. The reason Apple moved into services, honestly, was because of growth, right? They had such heady growth for so many years. Once you saturate the market
I'm pretty sure they were looking over at the other folks that were running the services for their customers saying, we want that money.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Right. And that way, every one of these companies is jealous of the ways that the other
Yeah, companies no, it's a grass. Right? It's greener effect.
There's the services right, right there. Apple yeah. One, Apple TV Plus, Apple Music, Apple Arcade. By the way, many of these services are horrible. Apple News is as bad as Microsoft News.
That's right.
But if you buy Apple One, you get it all. And so I guess.
And then you'll get in there and then you're like a tick.
And a lot of the services revenue is that $20 billion from Google, I should point out. That is one of the services is selling your data to Google.
Yeah, you notice they don't promote that on stage. they don't talk about the.
That's actually a big chunk of it.
The grift they're doing with Google.
Yeah.
You know,
we got to talk about this Epic case. Because it is because it's an Apple loss. There's not a lot of Apple losses out there.
Yeah, but look how they turned a loss into a victory.
And look how they're going to end up in court. And listen, this is one of those things where, like, all the three of us and then everyone listening to this, we all have super strong opinions about everything, right? And the thing I'll say about Epic versus Apple that I think everyone will agree on is that regardless of your stance, the ruling is the ruling, and Apple has to do a certain thing, and they're end running around it in a way that they're still going to charge. They're still going to make all the fees. And I'm sorry, that does not violate the spirit of this requirement at all. No. And so I think Epic is actually going to prevail here. And that's an opinion. But
just to fill you in, on Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to review the lower court decision, which held Apple on one count of the, I think there were nine total. You have to allow third parties to refer, using Amazon as an example. When I go to the Kindle app on iOS, it says you can't buy books here, and they're not allowed to say where you can buy books. They can't say just go to our Amazon store and buy them. They say you just can't buy them here. Now they'll be able to put a link in to Amazon.com, and you'll be able to click that link and buy the book there.
Yeah.
But Apple's retort to that is, well, we're still going to charge you 27%.
Well, so and the what they did was, because they've been working on this for months, is they altered their arrangement with developers. They have a new support dog that explains this, and you have to meet certain technical requirements so Apple can see that you're doing this. You can't have the two things side by side, so they can see the difference in price.
Right.
And because you're going through what they call I think it's a generic browser instance or whatever. You have to log into the third-party site as if you had never been there before. It's not a seamless experience. So they're making it more expensive and horrible.
Now, do you think the courts will say, no, that's not the spirit of the judgment, and go back and do it, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, but that's another 2 years of litigation.
That's absolutely not the spirit of the, right? That's not absolutely not the spirit. Yeah.
But this, the thing is, when you've run out of appeals for your current case, make a new case.
Right.
Wow.
But I mean, Apple kind of brought this on themselves, right? I mean, it's...
they shouldn't have gotten this far.
And the EU is going to ultimately make them... Although they say now, the rumor is now that Apple will respond to the DMA, the EU Digital Markets Act, by making a separate store just for Europe. And everybody else is still going to have to buy through the Apple store. So they're going to go kicking and screaming all the way.
The dumb part is they could have done this from the outset. Right. Yeah. Like you could have saved all of this time and just circumvent.
Think of the billions of dollars they're making.
Well, the lawyers are happy.
Lawyers are happy too.
Yeah. My point about Google and Apple with regards to App Store fees is always that they know this is going away. This is going to go down dramatically at some point. But why not milk it for as long as we can? And one of the great things you could do as a gigantic company fighting small companies is take them to court. Because you can afford it. And an Epic and a little F you to, I mean, Apple, it'll F you to Epic was like, now you have to pay our court costs.
They want $73 million in court costs.
Anyone who thinks Apple is an ethical fair minded company of any kind, I'm sorry, but look at what they're doing here. It's
tech giant. Theme is common here, right?
Look, I mean, they are a publicly held company. They have a fiduciary responsibility. They're stakeholders to maximize profits.
But
I think stakeholders are reasonably
their marketing is all about how we're different and we're better. And the reason you come here is because we're so much better. And they're not better. They're just as bad.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, they're not any worse than Microsoft. I'm not claiming that. They're just
honestly,
as bad.
This is how the church works. I mean, I don't want to offend anybody,
I'm dying to hear this.
Are you sure you don't, Leo? I'm not so sure.
Actually, before you say what you're going to say.
For 2,000 years.
Hold on a second. Good for you to figure out a non-controversial way to explain this. Go ahead. Yep. Go ahead. I can't wait.
You can, I don't need to go into detail, but you understand what I'm saying. That, yeah. I mean, while selling indulgences for years during the Middle Ages,
there you go.
The Catholic Church said, you know, you don't have to go to hell. Just give us some money.
There I have never heard anyone explain that the Catholic Church has ever been horrible. I'm surprised to hear this.
I think we just referred to the movie Dogma, right? It's like, if you walk through this arch, you're forgiven. You're good.
Yeah.
Right.
And while they don't sell indulgences anymore, I think you could make a case.
But you could buy one on eBay? I mean,
organized religion here and there, not just Christianity, but other organized religions as well, have professed the brotherhood of man while making sure that everybody else got theirs. I don't think this is Apple, Microsoft. This is a human kind of propensity. Yeah,
there you go. Fair enough. I actually, one of the many ways that Apple is
meanwhile stabbing your fellow man in the back.
In other words, you can get to heaven, but only if you agree with exactly what we think, even though it's 99.9% the same as everything else. And, you know,
humans are tribal. There was a great, and Elon Musk tweeted it, so I'm embarrassed to admit it, but Elon Musk said, you got to watch this Jonathan Haidt lecture from 2015 about tribalism. And it's a really good, I mean, he's done some TED Talks as well. I interviewed him for his book, The Righteous Mind, some years ago on triangulation. He's a social psychologist. But he says, look, this has been evolutionarily a very good thing for us to be tribal. It's kept the human race afloat. But it has its consequences. And you see tribalism in
Apple. You start seeing the other people as the others.
They're the other. Yeah.
That's right.
And you see that happening with Apple, a little less so with Microsoft, but you see it happening in technology. Well, it's human. It's not technology. It's human. It's how humans are.
Microsoft, until, you know, the past year, has kind of positioned itself as the, you know, come in for the hug, you know, we're going to work with everyone kind of company. And
meanwhile, you know, engulf and devour. Come on.
And I mean, they back Epic in their court battle. They back. You know, they're also going after these companies through third parties in a very passive aggressive way that kind of shows you where they're, you know, where they're
kind of aggressive. But
my only point is they're not unique. This is how humans behave.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. That's right. We're all terrible. That's, you know, it was, it's in the DNA.
What's amazing about humanity? We're simultaneously amazing and beautiful and creative and innovative and the worst sons of ever. And it's just, it's human. It's what being human is. It's a very odd mixture.
Why do we have kids? What happened there?
I don't know.
We all had kids. We knew, if we only had known.
There's a great poem by Philip Larkin. I can't say it without getting bleeped.
Yeah.
They F you up, your mom and dad. They don't, may not mean to, but they do. They fill you with the faults they had and add some others just for you. But they were effed up in their turn by fools in old time hats and coats who half the time were soppy stern and half at each other's throats. Wait a minute, I'm not done. This is the best part.
I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
Man hands down misery to man. It deepens like the coastal shelf. So get out early as you can and don't have kids yourself.
Yeah.
Ta-da.
Those are the truly good people, you know? Plus, let's face it, they have more money way earlier in life than anyone else, you know? Going on trips.
Yeah, don't have kids. Stuff. And we're saying this, the three of us all have had kids. So.
Yeah, yeah. And we speak from experience.
And we know.
I had a dark moment.
By the way, we had a big baby shower today for Viva, who works in our continuity department, who is having her first child. So, Viva,
what are you doing? Yeah, what
don't listen to this show. Yeah, don't listen to this show. What do you do?
We're just too late now. Old guys. I was worried that it occurred to me a long time ago that my kids' best qualities came from my wife and their worst qualities came from me. And I had this discussion with my daughter, Kelly, a couple months ago. And I was very upset about this. And I was like, Kelly, I feel so bad. I'm so sorry. You know? And she looked at me, she said, are you crazy? She goes, do you know what I got from mom? And then she went through this list and I was like, oh, I'm living with a monster.
I'm telling you. F you up. What is that? M and dad.
You know? She had the list truth. And I was like, yikes. So I guess we're all like backstabbing murderers, really.
Yeah. But we got it from our parents and they got it from their parents. Yeah. It's just human. Sure.
It's just a great excuse chain.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Boy, we got philosophical here. But I almost just wanted to say it to defend Microsoft's greedy backstabbing corporate
How could they be any other way?
By the way, Leo, that's why I'm here, to defend it. You know, that's been my stance all these 30 years. You know, defend the terribleness.
Yeah, don't think they have to be this way. I think we can make profits other ways.
Well, I agree. And I wonder if the stock market would understand that. If a company said, look, short term, our quarterly results may suffer, but we are looking long term for the benefit of our customers.
And we think
that's not going
to I would love that to be the case. Absolutely not.
Yeah. No.
Right?
I think so. Blame the stock market. Blame the shareholders.
Well, we're blaming capitalism, right? This is the system, you know? And once you become a publicly held company, you got to play the game.
Jamie Dimon would like you to believe that, right?
I wish you could say, though.
Well, hey, look, I know some people
would believe this.
We don't need to grow anymore. Let's just do the right thing for our
customers. When they started, said it's customer-centric, customer-first. This is the path to success. Yeah, they lost a lot of money for years. In fact, so much so they couldn't get more money from the stock market. They had to start borrowing. But eventually, and this is, by the way, Corey's prime example of insuretification, eventually... Mm-hmm. They turn it around so they could extract all the money out of this great market that they had built over the years. It was
then that you could hear the evil laugh growing in the background. Where is that coming from?
There it is. Money, 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 money.
Nice.
Money makes the world go
round. Oh, boy. Well, anyway, like I said, there's no solving. We're not going to walk away feeling fulfilled in any way. There's no solving this problem. It's just the terribleness that is our world and I don't know. The answer, I can tell you what the answer to big tech is not vinyl and carburetor cars. And, you know, it's not this nonsense.
Going back ain't good either.
No, that's not. No, sorry. So but I don't have an answer. I don't think no one does.
No.
Okay, let's move on. parenting was the second thing in the
thing. You want to cover the little
well, that's the first time.
The EU stuff.
Well, these are the big buckets, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the first of the big controversies of this past week. The second, also a surprise, came out of nowhere. And I'll just preface this by saying I've gone through what I think of as the seven stages of guilt when it comes to AI. It is, it isn't, it's great, it's crazy, you know, but whatever. Richard very calmly, rationally was like, nope, this is the year 2023 where we're, you know, Microsoft is going to announce things and then 2024 is going to be when they implement them, right? And by the time I hit the end of the year, I was on board with that. Yep, he was right all along. And we didn't realize how right he was because less than 2 weeks into the year, they implemented everything. I thought last year was crazy. What the what? Like, if you had said to me, this is how 2024 is going to go down. They're going to slowly expand Copilot for Microsoft 365 to bigger businesses and maybe lower the 300 license, you know.
Smaller businesses. They'll move that, right?
Yeah. They had said, we're going to bring this to consumers. So maybe sometime by mid-year, you know, second half of the year, we'll have a third tier of consumer Microsoft 365, which is a little more expensive, you know. We'll have the AI stuff maybe. We're going to eventually allow, I mean, look, there was no version of 2024 where they were going to let people, like individuals, build GPTs of their own. I don't even know why anyone would want to do that as a normal mainstream human being. They did all of everything I said and more 3 days ago. Like it's out. Well, the GPT builder is coming, but they announced it. I don't know. I don't even know what to say anymore. And I have one thing to say about this, but Copilot Pro is the consumer product. Copilot Pro is basically Copilot for Microsoft 365, but for consumers, right? It adds the AI features that are in all the Office apps. It gives you some consumer oriented things like the, whatever they're calling the image creator thing today. You get extra credits and extra quality and peak time usage and all that kind of stuff. And you're going to get this Copilot GPT builder so you can build your own little personal GPT. And this is the kind of thing Richard is actually doing right now. I think Leo is too.
I've been with OpenAI's ChatGPT, which is the same, right?
Yep. So, and I've been thinking about how would I do this for myself? I have, 30 years of archives. And
perfect. Make a Paul Thurrott expert system. You'll never have to write another article.
Well, not write another article, but rather one of the weird problems I have because of how much I write is that I can't.
Oh, did I write this before? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, did I do this or what did I say about this or what, you know, finding this stuff is actually very difficult. So That would, you know, be useful to me personally. I can't imagine anyone else would need this thing. But
imagine anyway, if MSDN and TechNet could have been put into expert system, right?
Sure.
I don't know why they haven't done that, frankly.
Maybe that is what Microsoft Learn becomes, right? You know, we'll see. So they just announced a flurry of things. I mentioned Copilot Pro for consumers, right? Which is the consumer version of Copilot.
It's the same price as ChatGPT. So
$20 per user per month.
That's what I pay right now.
You have to have a Microsoft 365 subscription.
But I have that.
As a consumer. And you have to, I should say it has to be personal or family. Because remember, there's the
now. Yeah.
And then, so you pay whatever you pay for that.
I wonder if that would be better or worse, or like it's the same.
Let's talk about that in 1 second, but let me just get through this list. Cause I do want to talk about that. I think that's an important point. If you have a Microsoft 365 business account, you might do that as your own. Like you have a custom domain. You're like, I have the basic thing. You can't do Copilot Pro.
You have to do the $30 business one.
Yep. So they have the $30 business one that's available basically to all businesses. They've removed the exceptions. They've removed the baseline number of licenses.
It's no more 300.
Yeah. So basically everyone on business can now get that. Copilot.
Well, it is $10 a month more, which is weird.
It is. Right. But we're going to what I want to get to. Copilot on mobile means there's an iOS and an Android native app for Copilot, which they released and never discussed back in December. This is why. And then Copilot is appearing also in the Microsoft 365 mobile app, which remembers the all up. It's kind of like OneDrive, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote, I think, all in one app or whatever. It's going to be in there as well, if it isn't already. And then I think the most confusing thing, honestly, when I think about mainstream users and Copilot and AI, I got to say the terminology is maybe the biggest hurdle. So this notion that they're going to give individuals like a Copilot GPT builder, I'm pretty sure this is the first time Microsoft has used GPT as the name of anything in their little ecosystem. I think people associate that with OpenAI and ChatGPT, but it's okay. Copilot GPT builder. In other words, you're going to build your own Copilot essentially, right? Okay, cool. All right. So why is the business version of Copilot $10 more per month? It's because of the Microsoft Graph, right? The missing piece for Microsoft on the consumer side right now, it's why Copilot and Windows 11 is so lame, is that they don't have that thing on the back end that ties together all those disparate data sources that exist in an organization. What they're trying to do is leech in all of your email through Outlook, leech in all of your personal data through OneDrive, leech in all of your activity online through Edge, and then use that as sort of a mini Microsoft Graph. But the reality is it's not there, right? So I think that's why. It's also the difference between what I would call like a commercially backed, licensed, supported service versus we're going to let you make cute pictures with, Bing or whatever they're calling it, Copilot now. It's consumer-y, right? I think $20 per month. Look, when you're paying as an individual $69 a year for 12 months of this service and you have to pay an additional $20, not for the year, but every single month, I think you've just eliminated 99% of the people out there who are like, wait, what? That's incommensurate with the cost of the thing.
And arguably a lot of the value isn't there because you don't have this big graph data set the companies are taking advantage of.
Yep.
So but that might also be intentional. Like I feel like they've rushed this out just to see what would happen.
So I think you're right. And I think by making it prohibitively expensive or restrictive, which is what they did in November, and now it's just expensive, they're cutting down on the number of people who are going to try it and then come out and say, this is garbage. Because one of the big problems for Microsoft is in their rush to AI and now their rush to implement it, what happens if they poison it? What if so many people say this is garbage that they never come back?
Right.
It's worth
a slow rollout. I mean, I would point out that the $20 a month is what you pay for ChatGPT Plus. So it's like, this is the alternative offering.
Yeah. But what do you pay for GitHub Copilot?
10.
Right. See, to me, that's a very targeted offering with a very clear value proposition.
And it is expected to go up.
Right? And you can't make a GPT with it.
But at $10,
it's code focused.
That's commensurate with the value that you get. If anything, it's almost a no-brainer. I will argue that almost any developer should probably have this, right?
Without a doubt, and one would argue it should be 20 and the consumer version should be 10.
There you go.
But the market currently says $20.
But even at 10, you have more than doubled the cost of this annual subscription. Yeah. You know, for $100 per month, you get a terabyte of storage for six users, all the Office apps downloaded to as many computers as you want, all of the Office apps in, with their full feature set enabled on mobile and on the web. And then you double that price and you get, a couple of AI features in Word. You know, like one of the arguments I made in this article I wrote about this was that, like, no one uses all of Office, right? So I'm not going to look and say.
You can't even list all of Office. Like, right. It's not a thing.
There are 24 new features in Office because of AI. Well, guess what? I only use Word. Well, how many features are there in Word? Four. And how many am I going to use? One of them might be interesting. Is that worth $20 a month? I mean, that's a lot of money. And that's really, that's the pragmatic real world human being.
Yeah. But only thinking, in the context of what you are already paying.
Isn't it priced?
ChatGPT is $20. This is $20.
Isn't also priced somewhat because it's so expensive for them to run? They have to.
Well, I mean, you know what?
Isn't the price related?
I don't think
to
they're
the
at
cost?
Break even
that
yet.
That sounds like a Microsoft problem, not a customer problem. So, you know, look at it this way. Back in the day, we used to have standalone Office products that would come out every 3 years, right? Office 2013, Office whatever, you know, all the different versions. Microsoft was like, you know, it would be better than this because these people are only paying us like once or twice a lifetime is if we could get them on a subscription, right? So we'll make it like, you know, we'll make it useful and we'll make it inexpensive. Well, how do we get them to pay for that? Well, we'll only put the new features in the subscription, right? So if you don't buy a new version of Office every 3 or 6 years, you're not getting any new features. The new features are all coming through the Microsoft 365 subscription. And my God, did they go to town on that. Yeah, we talked about this, how hard it was to keep up.
Part of that was it was easier to develop in the cloud. You can slip small features in. You can benchmark it.
But I mean, I'm talking about all the clients. I mean, like the every month, the Office desktop clients on Mac and Windows, on mobile, in the web, would all be, there was some matrix of new features all the time.
All the time.
So that kind of, you know, it hits some point. There's a weird thing. Like the standalone Office user base was over a billion, probably 1.5, 1.6 billion at one point. The Microsoft 365 subscriber base is somewhere in the 300, maybe 400 million point, but more lucrative because it's money every month. So what's the next step beyond that? Stop giving them new features. Claim that these new features are AI and make that a new tier. Right. But the thing is, it's so much more expensive than the thing you're already paying for, whether it's on the consumer.
So you don't want them to compare them that way. Like you're comparing except when you're comparing it to ChatGPT.
Well, no, I was going to compare it to the past. If you compare the features they've added, and by the way, it's not like they're going to come up with that many new AI features every month now. But if you could pick any given month, you could go back in time to 2017, 2018, whatever, you pick a year. Don't care. Pick a month. Don't care. Look at the 117 new features they put into Office and compare it to the 7 they just added, and then compare the value of the relative features. And I'm telling you, it was better back then. And now, not only am I going to have to pay more to get that handful of new feature stuff, it's not going to keep coming. Now I just get to pay to have this functional level. It's like they've added not just a new tier, but a really expensive new tier.
You know, the development is much easier in small increments, constantly deploying, testing, and adjusting. Yeah. But the downside is you don't get a big bang version number anymore.
Right.
And so it's hard to market that.
It is.
Now with more incremental feature improvements, right?
Like right, exactly.
You want to have a party for a big version, and you can't give them the features over 18 months and then go, and now what? We'll call that a version, right? Like it's very problematic. It's a better way to build software, but a lousier way to sell it.
Yeah, Windows suffers from the same problem, you know.
Agile.
It's a problem, right?
Yeah, Windows doesn't really, because they're not selling new versions. So Windows constantly, it comes with the machine, and it was licensed through the vendor.
So if you
like incremental improvements. I want my AI to get smarter every day.
Yeah.
Maybe not every day. But you're right. Later in the show.
Help me decide, though, if I should give Microsoft my $20 or OpenAI my $20.
Which is actually the question you should be talking about.
Right? Or should you give them $30 and do the commercial version? And
no,
how do those things kind of line up? What's some relative value?
Yeah.
So as an individual.
I think if I used Office a lot, then I would probably want the
It would depend. Let's say you're an accountant, right? So you're in Outlook, you're in Teams, you're in Excel. Right. Those are your apps.
You can do spreadsheets.
So you can go up to Copilot Pro and go look down the feature list and see, like, well, okay, what do I get? You know?
If Word didn't respect me, I'm not sure I'd want it.
Right.
And since Word does not respect you.
It doesn't. Hey, AI, could I get, what do I have
AI
to do?
AI definitely doesn't respect anybody.
This is a lot of anthropomorphization for me. Thanks. Software has no ability to respect.
It respects nobody.
Yeah. Guns don't kill people, Richard. You know that. Or bullies don't kill people.
Software developers do.
That's right.
Yeah.
Bastards.
So which should I buy? Is there an API key, for instance, with Bing Chat? Do you get an API key?
So one of the things that's coming, like we said, was this Chat GPT builder. You might want to hold off and see what that looks like.
Yeah, because I like that's the fact that I can build a custom GPT. I also like that I can provide an API key to third parties,
right?
And add my Chat GPT to that. And that is a very important feature. So this is the business version, but
The Microsoft ecosystem. The Copilot ecosystem is such that a lot of the stuff that happens on the OpenAI side should transfer 100%. Right,
it's the same thing they're talking about.
They're the same plugin model, right?
They have ChatGPT-4. So
that helps
Turbo.
Supportability. If you're worried short term, you know, like at least you know that should be pretty straightforward. Ideally, what we need is the AI version of cloud native, where you could easily bring your models over to a different, like to Google or Amazon or whatever happens to be out there. So we'll see. Obviously, in these early stages, it's astonishing there's any partnership, right? I mean, in a way, but I don't know. I can't answer that question. I've not used the OpenAI stuff, so
I'm going to keep my OpenAI.
I did start paying for Copilot Pro.
Yeah.
So I could see how this works for now.
Cool. I'm in the OpenAI camp too. I was saying before the show, like I'm looking at my billing on my API, working through Home Assistant. It's going to come up to about $1, $1.50 a month.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it's a day-to-day utilization.
Which is, by the way, that itself is very interesting. When Microsoft launched what was then called Windows Azure a million years ago, one of the big open questions was like, we're not really sure what the billing's going to look like here, right? So we're in the early days, they were like, we're going to send you 3 months of fake bills. Based on your usage, you're going to see what we think we would charge you. And, tell us what you think, But in this case, we're just as early in the game. And in that case, it's making sense for you, right? Mm-hmm. Financially, which wasn't always the case.
But I'm also the kind of guy who goes and looks at logs to figure out, like, I'm not going to be surprised at the end of the month. I'm, I know better. Yeah.
Right,
like I would have had a very different reaction. It was like, "Oh, there's $100,"
Yeah, we so when we moved into this condo, there's a gas like fireplace. We never had one of these things. We always thought this was lazy. We like wood and
it's the best.
Oh no, it's the best. In fact, my cats are addicted to it now. They creep ever closer to the burning hot slate bottom of the thing.
The hotter, the better.
They're like little pizzas. They turn over to keep themselves from dying, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's amazing.
Evening out their leopard spotting, yes.
But the question was, it's cold now, right? And we run this thing every day. We run it in the morning. We run it at night. You know, the cats
it's really
love
expensive.
It.
Get ready.
We're like, what's this going to look like?
So we got the first bill. So much.
No, the first bill was $100. We're like, okay. No, we can do that. It's going to be okay. But yeah, if that bill had been $400, sorry, cats, you're freezing your asses. Yeah. Like, we're done.
You can die now. Yep. Make your own heat.
Yeah, it's kind of I always think of it as it's a cosmetic heater. It's not. It's a luxury heater.
It's very warm in front of it, right in front of it. It's very warm. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have there's no temperature.
We have a heat pump, so it's much more efficient to use the heat pump, I think, than it is to.
We got baseboards in here, but we've been using wood. So we cut a bunch of trees on the property that needed to be cut.
Chop those trees down.
So hold on.
Burn them.
It was that or they fell down.
Plenty of trees, Leo. I don't know. Like, it's not like a bunch of them burned down this year.
Yeah. Just take that tree and put it in the atmosphere as carbon
And let it protect the whole planet.
Dioxide.
There you go.
Yeah. So and the whole planet warms up. The cats are going to be so happy.
That's 2 degrees Celsius between friends. Actually, our stove or whatever it's called, a fireplace, works if the power goes out. So we may need it.
Right. It's nice to have a gas backup. Yeah.
That's kind of neat. So,
Anywho.
Yeah. So all this Copilot stuff just happened. I have my concerns about, maybe they're going too fast. We'll see. I'm kind of interested to see My God, it was like January 14th
it's
not, or 15th.
It's going at the so fast, but it's, oh my is God, it too fast is a different question.
If Christmas, the holidays hadn't occurred, they would have released this thing on December 2nd. Like they were, they've been raring to go
they're
on not, this.
They're going fast.
You know?
All right, it's we didn't get our pause in.
No.
So no. Actually, let's do the Galaxy thing because you were going to do that.
Yeah.
So you, so when the, you get well, to you, the end of this AI segment,
this is the end. We'll I mean, pause. So I didn't get to watch the Galaxy event. I saw some of the headlines. To. I did see that Samsung partnered with Google on their Gemini LLM.
Yeah.
For the
so
phone.
Am
They're
I
actually
wrong?
Putting it on the phone.
But didn't maybe it wasn't last year, but in years past, hasn't Microsoft had a presence at these Galaxy events? I feel they like they have.
I don't know. Was it a regular presence? I mean, we.
I feel like it was
as recently and as and, last week. We talked about
your
their
phone. Right? You know, the phone link thing,
and now there's a special thing if you have a Samsung Galaxy Book laptop and a Samsung phone and use yeah. phone link, you get additional features, right?
And another thing, in previous years, Samsung was loath to mention Google. In fact, I can remember a Samsung Galaxy event; they didn't mention Android, like. Yeah. Oh,
so you know, I
it's our
for
own
years
thing.
I was working on the theory that Samsung was trying to eliminate Google
exactly.
and Android from the equation, and that the
exactly.
way we would know they were finally there is when they released things like Samsung Maps,
right?
And you know, like because they you know they have their own browser, their own email, their
yeah,
own messages,
own
their own phone, their you know, yeah. So
something weird happened because all of a sudden yeah. they're in partnership.
Yeah,
maybe Google's paying them $20 billion
yeah.
a year. What do you
well,
think?
Well, so. When Google, went, I'm sorry, when Samsung did their smart things, smart home platform, they went that alone, right? That was mm-hmm. their own thing. They didn't partner with Google and Google mm-hmm. Home or whatever system.
They have Tizen, their own kind of anti-Android.
Watch. Although, yeah, but now, see, they've got, no, but there's
but
a
now,
where for,
no,
now they're back.
That's right.
They're back.
It's where.
Back.
So
yeah.
I'm really wondering if Samsung and Google are having a rapprochement.
Or mending the fence.
In
yeah.
fact, I'll go even further, and I wonder if Google is kind of, I've never really understood why Google feels like it has to have a phone itself.
You need a reference phone.
Yeah.
It's
sort of
is
like,
it a reference phone? It used to be in the early
the
days. It was
one rationale for Surface I could make, which I can't because they don't actually do this. Would be if they did that, right? Because
but
they
Google's
used to have this thing called Signature
either.
PC. Remember,
Google
right?
used their own processors.
Signature PC was like their version of Nexus, and
right.
then Surface is like their
Sad
version of
they
Pixel.
Killed
right?
it. Yeah.
So I do think there's a place in the world for, especially in an open ecosystem, right? Apple does their own thing, so that you know we can't count that. But on the other side of the fence. Where Samsung is a great example of polluting this Android experience with their own stuff. Some of it's mm-hmm. good. Most of it's terrible. There are apps you can't uninstall, right? There, I mean, they duplicate apps. It's a mess,
oh,
right?
You and I both own Pixels because we
yeah,
want the
right.
signature.
And I like that
experience.
Yep, yeah, I really do. And
but that's
I would hate
Google.
I would,
you know, Google kills stuff.
I know. And they have never seen any level of success that makes
that's
them
right.
look like they're in the same market as the iPhone.
That's right.
This is the problem.
Or even close to Samsung.
The iPhone just surpassed Samsung for
globally,
you know,
yeah.
smartphone sales in a year.
Yeah.
I, you know, Samsung, the one thing you could always say was like, look, yeah, too much crapware. They do their own UI, which is honestly pretty good. And they do their own services and they have their own ecosystem stuff. You know, they get earbuds and blah, 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 whatever. They have all this stuff. Was like, well, you know, but they sell so many of these things, right? So it you kind of have to pay attention to it because they're so big and they still are, but. That the fact that they were just beaten by like a monoculture company is like got to be a little scary for both Google and Samsung. Right?
Here's my scenario. Samsung is very much threatened by the Chinese companies. Huawei, Xiaomi,
yeah.
and some names
well,
you haven't heard
China,
of.
I mean,
transmissible.
Apple is too, right? I mean, to some degree.
Yeah, yeah. These guys are coming.
Yeah.
And Samsung is more threatened than Apple by these guys. So that's on the one hand, the pressure on that hand. Yeah, they would like to be Apple.
Well, thank God for the United States blocking all the Chinese stuff.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
right.
You know.
And then on the other hand, Google, I think, looks at
yeah.
the Pixel
who cares
phone
who they
and says,
with?
We spent a lot of money to make this thing, and we don't make any money on it. It's a tiny business. We've got no mind share out of it. Maybe it's time to kill it.
Oh boy, that depresses me so much. I'm not arguing the logic of it. It totally makes sense to me. I, as someone who loves Surface, but also argues this thing doesn't make any sense.
I don't know why Microsoft keeps making Surface.
I know you could make the same argument for Pixel. Yeah. And I hate that because I really do prefer that it's not a, see, people get this wrong all the time. Like it's some kind of a clean, pure Android version. It's not. It's actually very heavily modified. This is not the thing they give to Samsung and then Samsung screws it up. Like they're building their own stuff on top of it. And honestly, it really meets the bar of their marketing where it's like the helpful phone that, you know, it answers spam calls and turns them away. It does us awesome. It's awesome at all that stuff. And yeah, I worry every day that it's going to go away every day. Yeah. I really do. It's awful.
You're talking about no Copilot in the S24, but didn't literally last week you were talking about how the Book 4 had an exclusive version of Copilot?
The Copilot in Windows 11, like
but it's on, it was for the Samsung Galaxy Book 4.
If you had a Book 4, a high-end Samsung phone of whatever generation, and were running, well, you would be running Windows 11. Yes, your Copilot experience has some additional features.
Okay. But nothing on the S24.
But that's not like, I'm sorry.
In fact, Google's AI. They're using Gemini for everything.
This is me.
And that's, I thought, interesting.
I wrote that poorly. I'm sorry. What I
Bixby
meant was,
Bixby's long gone.
Let me rephrase. No, it's like no Copilot. Like, in other words, like local, like SLM or whatever they're calling it. Like, Google has, Samsung has partnered with Google for their Gemini. Like, when they announced Gemini in early December, they announced that Pixel 8 Pro only would be the first phone to have this thing locally. Now, Samsung S24 Ultra, I don't know all of them, but at least Ultra will have it as well.
They're using the NPU designation, Microsoft's NPU.
Interesting. Yeah. And because Qualcomm chips do not use that terminology.
Yeah. interesting. Samsung is using Exynos again, but not in the U.S. They're going to use Qualcomm.
Not in the U.S., yeah.
But Qualcomm,
so they must have their own NPU or whatever they're calling it, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And Qualcomm and Google, Samsung and Google announced that they're going to have a joint sharing platform, that there won't be two.
So this was announced at CES. So this is Google used to have something called Nearby Share, Nearby Sharing, and they're combining that with Quick Share from Samsung and calling it Quick Share, which is the Samsung name. Interesting. Mm-hmm. I was not happy with the Nearby Share name because Windows 11 has a nearly identically named feature and they're not compatible. And so
there's reasons.
It'd be nice if this were all, you know, Apple, Samsung, Google, the thing Windows is, would all
I
work
said,
together.
I think I said this as recently as last week. I feel like I've always felt, long felt, that there's a missed opportunity with Google and Microsoft for them to partner to meet this ecosystem threat from Apple. But now that you see what's happening with Samsung, you're like, okay, maybe that might even be the better company, right? I mean, they do make the best-selling Android phones by far. I bet Samsung... That's probably not true. I was going to say Samsung might be bigger than the rest of the market combined. That's not true.
I have to think that OpenAI and Samsung talked a lot about using ChatGPT.
Samsung is a big company. I'm sure they talked to everybody. Yeah, get the best deal they can.
It's interesting they chose Gemini. Yeah, maybe it's just about money.
It's probably because Google is more incented to get that deal than the other companies, right?
That's right.
Regardless of what happens with Pixel, there is a fragmentation issue in Android that I think drives people away. And it's the yang, if you will, to Apple's yin of everything works together. You know, one of the problems with Android and the broader
systems. But one would argue this is the success of Android. The reason that the Android market as a collective is larger than the Apple market is because you have a whole bunch of vendors who get to do what they want.
So this is why the PC was successful for a long time as well. Yep. Same thing, right? You know, I would buy like a Dell computer because they had a special feature or something, you know, whatever it might be or whatever it was. You know, I don't know. There's something to be said. We keep talking about this. You know, the thing that Apple has been able to succeed at that no one else seems to be able to succeed at, for all the awfulness as we see it from the outside, there is, you know, there's some benefit there.
And
it's always going to be second rate.
They are, but side. They are do run the largest portion of the Android market. You know, everybody else combined is larger than them, but they are the single largest.
So if you look at, I didn't put it in the notes, but if you look at smartphone sales from the last quarter and from last year, only IDC has weighed in. So it's just a single source, but Apple surpassed Samsung for the first time in history to be the biggest seller of smartphones in the world. It's they're close, 234 million iPhones in 2023 versus 226.6 for Samsung. This has been true for a long time. The next three companies are Xiaomi, Oppo, and something called Transsion, which are all Chinese companies.
Right.
I've never even heard of that third one.
But most of these products only sell in China.
That's true. But anyone who goes to Europe,
they just don't sell in the U.S. They sell everywhere in the world but the U.S.
Yeah, and in Mexico, when we go to Mexico, there are ads everywhere. All over the place for Huawei.
Yeah, Huawei.
Huawei phones, Huawei earbuds, Huawei, you know, that stuff is still being sold elsewhere. So,
there's the list. All of them, except Samsung and Apple, are Chinese companies.
Right. They're all that's left. Notably, Google, not on that list. Motorola, not on that list. Yeah. You know,
Google's in the others. They're just focused on the North American market.
But look at the far right column is the growth or diminution.
No, I can't tell from the tiny size. Are you looking at the year or the last quarter?
It's year over year, quarter to quarter.
But it's the year number, okay. Yep.
So,
Apple sales were up 3.7% for the year. Samsung's were down 13.6% for the year. Yikes. Yep. The last quarter went actually not too great.
Everybody was down except for Transsion, which is up 30%, whoever the hell they are.
That is. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about some numbers like this for the PC industry in a little while, but this is always an interesting time of year because we get to look back and see how things went.
And IDC is pretty reliable in this, right?
They are, but, you know, I want to see Gartner and at least, you know, I usually try to average those guys because they do measure things a little differently. But it's probably true that I'm not saying that Apple did not surpass Samsung last year and whatever. Apple had a blockbuster last year at a time when the market overall was not doing great, you know?
Yeah.
So they're changing some minds. I mean,
You are, I hope, having your mind changed by the fabulous Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com, and Richard Campbell, runisradio.com. We've got the back of the book still to come. Windows 11 coming up next. What's new? I can't believe we've gone almost two hours and not mentioned Windows.
I wanted to hit the two big ones, right? Because this week has just been kind of weird. So actually, I just mentioned this. We might as well talk about PC sales, right?
Oh, yeah.
One thing I do every January is I update my little chart, and a couple of interesting things about PC sales is that for the year, 13.25% decline year over year compared to 289 in 2022, but they declined 16-point-something percent. I don't see it right here, but 16-point-something percent the previous year, and both Gartner and IDC believe that we have bottomed out, and this year we're going to see some growth. It may not be fair to point to 2021, which was the 344 million high water mark for the previous decade, that pandemic era, you know, PC boon. But this is the fewest PCs that this industry has sold since 2006. And yikes.
Right.
You know, that's a little scary. And no one's talking about big double digit growth. Right. And frankly, if this AI thing on the client doesn't pan out, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to see. I don't know what I don't know what to say. Lenovo still number one, 59.4 million units, 23.7% market share. HP close behind, number two, Dell, number three, Apple, and then Asus. But, Lenovo, HP and Dell sell significantly more than any other company. Dell is almost twice the size of Apple from a unit sales perspective.
Wow. But the point, you know, the analysts are saying bottomed out, but you don't know how wide the bottom is. It might just sit at 250 for a while.
Yeah. So, So sales did decline in every quarter of the year, but it was only a 1.5% decline in the fourth quarter. So that,
it was a year of deferral. Certainly that's, you know, the conversation I was having with sysadmins was... And buy the extended warranties, like we're not replacing machines right now. Everybody's a bit
that's
nervous.
Right. Stretch it out another year or two. So,
and that does speak to it might be a surge, right? Eventually, there is no more extended warranty. That stuff starts to get expensive and machines start to fail.
And just from a business PC perspective, which is probably 2/3 of the market, you can't put it off forever. And so,
one would argue Copilot could move the market on this. It's like, hey, you know.
So here's the alternative.
We've got to go to 11 because 2025, Copilot looks interesting. I want my MPU. Like, there's some cases for the next 2 years selling all
the machines. What if you're rabidly anti-AI, which I would say some people are.
Some people are. But,
you could buy a 14th gen.
We'll be buying their old gear as they go out of business, right?
Because they can't compete. I happen to be with you on that one, but I'm just throwing out this as a possibility. We don't know how long you're going to be able to buy a CPU without an MPU attached to it. No, so
it's any more than you used to choose you're going to get a coprocessor or not. Like, it's kind of silly.
Yep.
You know, it's going to be in the chip. It's going to be marginal cost difference. And if you don't want it, don't use it.
But if you don't want this stuff at all, just don't buy a PC that doesn't have it. You can do that right now, right?
Get an abacus.
I'm literally devil's advocating, and this, I'm not actually saying this.
Yeah, I'm with you. But it is, it is interesting to see how long the stretch goes, because we were expecting a catastrophe in 23, which did not come. So now we just think that the catastrophe is delayed or passed, and that's the debate.
So someone has asked in Discord whether I would buy, and I'm going to throw this to you. I'll hand us off like any delegator. Would you still buy a PC, recommend buying a PC with an AI chip today, even though there's no compelling use case right now?
Yeah.
Would you? I mean, the question is,
The guy who bought the Surface Studio 2, you're going to ask him that.
I mean, but what's your rationale? In other words, you're advising someone else, a friend, right?
Yeah.
And what do you say to that? Like, what?
I wouldn't think about it at all.
It shouldn't
be part of your decision making, right? Okay. I think any significant AI utilization is going to use on GPUs anyway, and so you can always retrofit anything you want. There's nothing special about the architecture of an MPU. It is a cheap version of a high performance video card. That's all it is.
There's also I would say, and for the short term, GPUs are going to be the better deal and not just compatibility wise, but performance wise, right?
Yes, they are more performant, but they're more expensive and they kick off more heat. On the other hand, you can retrofit virtually any machine with one, so it's not a big deal if you even need to.
So, I personally will not buy a PC that doesn't have one of these chips. And this is just a future proofing.
I want to see. You're not a normal human.
I know that. That's why I know. And I also, there's a debate to be had, and we just don't have enough information to have it, about which of these architectures will actually be better, more efficient, more performant, whatever the, you know.
Well, and it's still a big debate of for what. Like, for the most part, the cloud vendors want you to run all that stuff on the cloud anyway. So the MPU is going to do.
I meant to make this point when we were talking about Copilot. So for all of these new services we can pay for and pay all this money for, not a single lick of it runs off an MPU, not even one. Not one little thing that runs on an MPU. And it's going to be one of the other interesting little implementation things to look for this year is whether that changes, right?
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, when I think about features in Microsoft Word running on my Windows desktop using AI, is the AI they're using dependent on things in the cloud, or is there some hybrid/local usage that would make this thing? It's an open question. We'd have to go look at the features and think about that.
Yeah. And for the most part, everything you've seen so far is running in the cloud.
It's cloud. Right? Not for the most, like literally 100%. It's all.
And it's certainly in the HA community, we're all about, can we run local? Because we, the whole point is your house works the same, whether you're connected to the internet or not.
Yeah.
And so far the experience has been, if you run it local, you can tell because it's lousy. Right. As soon as you start using the OpenAI API, it's good.
Right.
For $1 a month. So it's like, I'm the guy with all the horsepower in the world, right? Like, I'm going to go harness some more machines and see if I can make this run.
You're
going to
make a farm, like you're going to have an AI farm by the time we're done with this thing.
Yeah. Something, sooner or later, there's going to be this loud fan noise coming from the space under the stairs.
And all the fish will be floating next to your house.
Yeah.
But at least you'll have fish, and pre-cooked.
I am mounting all that rack gear now on plywood because I'm going totally rack free. So I'll make sure it's a flame retardant plywood.
Yes. No, I would say matters. So then maybe it depends on how you think you will use AI. If all you think you're going to do is the Microsoft 365 Copilot/whatever OpenAI,
which I have yet to use, right? Like GitHub Copilot almost every day. Now HA pretty much 100%
in the cloud, right? So
cloud dependent.
Yeah. Who cares? You don't need it on the PC.
No.
But Leo and you, and hopefully me someday soon, will be working with stuff locally. And if you're, if you see that in your future, you want to get going on that and experimenting with it, I would dive into it.
I just don't think you know yet.
Yeah. What there's no way to know.
Right.
There's no way to know.
You know, and,
well, in the experience,
I can't buy a Mac that doesn't have an NPU.
So. Yeah. All the M2s yeah. have them, right?
Like, well, that's going to happen on the PC side. It's just going to
inevitably. Years,
but, yeah. but we'll have, you know,
it's cheaper to make one chip.
Yeah. The question is whether Intel comes out with 15th gen and it's all AP or NPU. Or if there's still that divide between NPU and non-NPU, and you know, we don't know. So we'll see. And AMD.
I just think of it as future-proofing, and it may be, as often as the case with future-proofing, that it was a waste of money.
Yeah. It's going to be Yagmi. Well,
but is it, like, it's not even
that's
cost
like saying,
more.
Life insurance is a waste of money. So you didn't die. So I guess you wasted your money. But
wasted my money.
Mashed potatoes mentioned, you know, forget about NPU. What about ARM? You know, I'm not, I might not never buy anything that doesn't have an ARM chip in it. And honestly, we're pretty damn close to that maybe being a thing, even on the Windows side. We'll see.
It we'll see in this in May when the GPU.
Yeah, that's another wait and see. We, you know,
Qualcomm
we'll
with
see.
An NPU.
I hope
comes
so.
In. Yeah, you know, we had Windows Central Daniel Rubino on Sunday, and he actually disagreed that an NPU was just a fancy GPU. He did say that he believes that the NPUs have capabilities that are more than, you know, that are really designed, tuned for AI in a way that
show me the data.
Yeah, I was going to say, show me why in this case where that's true. Like,
I don't know.
Yeah. If you were, what's that local image generation software you can run?
Stable Diffusion or?
Stable Diffusion. So it might be very telling to look at that app and see how, not on a Qualcomm device, right? Because that's basically just GPU, CPU. But now that we have these dedicated GPU and NPU chips in Intel chipsets, what gets hit the most?
See if they run better.
Yeah. No, we'll see which one actually makes the bigger difference.
Right? I hope there's instrumentation for that, right? Like, show me on the task manager that it's actually, you can see GPU being used. You can't see NPU being used.
Yeah, we didn't do this in any sort of partisan way, but we've kind of been dumping on NVIDIA for a while. But we should acknowledge that there's a version of this future where the GPU does win out, right? And that NPU figures something out. I mean,
NVIDIA also makes AI versions of their GPUs.
Yes.
Right?
What did I say? I'm sorry, I meant NVIDIA.
Well, you said GPU. NVIDIA both does GPUs and NPUs. Yeah. I guess NPU would be a nice generic term.
I think
for these.
It
isn't, unfortunately. It's
the future
Microsoft
of AI
term.
Is almost certainly both, right? And even the whatever the Intel system and that Ultra Core Ultra chipset is called.
Let's put it this way:
tunnels to both, right?
Both Microsoft and Google and Amazon have dedicated AI chips. Google calls them TPUs.
And
what
types
servers.
Of chips are they, Leo? What types?
They're not GPUs. They're special.
No, but what's the architecture?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, these. You know? I'm sorry. You're talking about the AI chips. Because
I'm talking about on their cloud.
When you're doing training in the cloud,
for training, right. They have TPUs that are dedicated.
That's right.
And they have their, what is the term? I can't remember. There's a specific term.
The tensor thing.
Not flops. Not teraflops. It's a something per second or something. Right. I can't remember what it is. PTS or something. But there are dedicated measurements and NPU specific measurements. And so I'm going to take it for granted that there is something more than just your generic GPU will do.
This is going to be a year. Look, there are going to be things that come and go. It's like, the first hardware accelerated graphics card, OpenGL based, whatever that was called, the Glide FX or whatever, something FX. Came and went in a in a flurry of excitement and was quickly surpassed. We might be talking a year from now about how much everything changed on the chipset side.
Right.
You know, we'll see.
I have to say that there is incentive for companies like Microsoft and OpenAI to get some of the load off their servers. That's expensive for them. So I think there is going to be progress in local AI. I personally, and I think there are probably a lot of businesses feel the same way, would like to use the AI locally.
I would.
I have a program, Python program called ChatGPT, or it's called GPT for All. It's an open source program. It uses, open source models. It'll use an OpenAI API key as well.
And if you're running the model locally, what are you paying $20 a month for?
Well, you don't. That's right. In fact, you don't have to. I happen to have an OpenAI
account. So what's the incentive for Microsoft?
No, you can download Llama.
The incentive is, you're really talking about a hybrid situation where it's local and cloud, and that it behooves both sides of this transaction to do this, right? It would be better for you as the client because you reduce latency, and it's better for Microsoft because you reduce the cost.
I've just never actually seen a neural net model that has a two-stage process like that. Like,
No, it's either data local states, or cloud.
I don't see it doing both.
You think businesses would prefer not to exfiltrate their data to the cloud? They'd like to do it all locally. Right?
Businesses would prefer to pay for nothing.
But the not just money, but privacy.
Well, okay, but this is just a data sovereignty issue. I mean,
yeah, people are very nervous. Companies are very nervous about AI's training on their private data.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I have to be gone by the top of the hour. So,
God. Well, let's move right through this then.
Anyway, we got to blow through this. I'm so sorry.
We have a show at the top of the hour, so it's perfect.
I'm just looking at this list. So most of this is pretty quick. This is only notable because this is representative of something they've been doing a lot lately, and I don't like it. Microsoft launched a new, I'm going to call it a weather experience. It's overstating what it is, but there's always been a weather experience on a lock screen. You can have one thing that's called like a detailed status item. This dates back to the Windows 8 days when we had quick status items as well. Most people by default is set to calendar, but you could set it to weather right now. And they just updated it so that it looks like a tile to me. They're calling it a card, but looks like a tile. So it's just a more graphical, bigger thing. And when you click on it and sign in, it goes to MSN weather or whatever. It's not a big deal, other than the fact that they didn't test it almost at all. They just shipped it publicly. Like they put it into like a subset of I think it was the beta or dev channel for like 3 days or something, and then threw it out into stable. It's like, guys, seriously, like kind of strange. So
it didn't catch fire. So give it to everybody.
Yep. Related to this, I think there's a Microsoft Store app update that I don't know the history of its being tested in the insider program, but that has also suddenly appeared very quickly in stable. And this is just, you're going to see a lot of notifications every time there's an app update, which honestly I find to be incredibly annoying and I thought was already in stable, but whatever. I have noticed that for sure. And then this is at the bottom of the Windows section. I'm just going to add it here because it kind of makes sense. Dev Home has come to Windows 10. Mm-hmm. Now, the two dark sides to this are, one, remember, no new features.
Right.
You know, we've gotten past that. But also, this is another example of an app that's not done. It's just kind of half-assed. You know, it's like Loop, New Outlook, Microsoft, Windows Backup, you know, Dev Home, like Dev Home. Why is Dev Home a default feature in Windows anything when most people are not developers?
Yeah.
Everybody's
a developer
thing.
Paul. Come on.
And also I'll just back up the notes here because this kind of ties into that. Microsoft recording a report, I think by Zach Bowden over at Windows Central, is reportedly going to bring back the Windows Insider Program beta channel for Windows 10, which also speaks to that. Oh, no new features. Just kidding. You know? So if that does happen, that I think will be indicative that Windows 10 and 11 are going to go forward in the lockstep, possibly with some, you know, with some of the new features, like they did with Copilot and now Dev Home.
Awesome.
Last week I complained that there were no new, you know, builds semi-recently, less than 24 hours after the show, they released three new builds. Of course they did. So the dev channel,
they heard
the,
you again.
Yeah. Whatever USB, the 80 gigabit USB version is going to be called like a Thunderbolt 5 or USB 5, whatever they call it. They're testing support for that in the dev channel. They're talking about auto starting Copilot, that pane on the side of the screen. If you have a 27 inch or bigger display, widescreen display.
Why does that matter? Why wouldn't it be resolution?
Because that way it doesn't get in your face. It's not in the way, right? It's if you have a widescreen display, it can be over on the side and you still have kind of a widescreen display left, if you will. A Copilot as a new application is not particularly sophisticated when it comes to stuff like running over your existing apps. Like if there are apps over there, it will push them out of the way.
Right.
And when you close it, they don't go back, you know, like the way Multimon used to work and sometimes still does. And then there's some Windows Share improvements that are coming also to the beta channel. They're adding more of those individual apps that can be used for sharing. It's kind of weird. Like I think what's happening is the app makers are not supporting the share feature.
Right.
So they're just adding it manually on an app by app basis. I suspect they went to these companies and said, we're just going to do it for you. Is that okay? And they're like, yep. And they're like, you know. So WhatsApp, Gmail, Twitter/X, Facebook, and LinkedIn are all being
interesting.
Yep.
Because somebody wasn't happy with what was being made or not being made. So it's like, we'll just
the share pane in Windows has been a wasteland since they it was introduced in Windows 8. You know,
nobody uses it.
Nobody uses it. Even OneDrive doesn't use it. They have their own share window. Like, seriously, guys. Anyway, don't get me started. I read a book about this. It makes me insane. That weather experience that's out and stable, they're testing it in beta. So, you know, Microsoft. And the app install notifications, also out and stable. They're testing that in beta, too. Also, instant arcade games. And this is like we see, I think, on, I think only Android does this, where you can kind of just run it from the Play Store and then it will load the background. I think they're doing that kind of thing for some arcade-y smaller games, right? The thing to look at, we talked about this last week, this notion of release preview now being the what we call moment five. They released, it's not actually a new build. It's a KB, like an update, like a cumulative update for the one they released, I think, a week or two ago, which is moment five, which mostly bug fixes, but more ink everywhere, which is the notion you can touch anywhere or with your pen, touch anywhere and write. Anywhere you can type, you can write, you know, is the idea behind this. Eye control system support at the system level, which they've been talking about actually for a long time. Some 7-zip bug fixes, frankly, and other fixes. So not a lot of new features, but that one's, you know, it's kind of locked, right? They're getting ready to probably, we should look at the date. So I'm guessing, this is my guess, you can see if I'm right or wrong. Next Tuesday is week D, right?
Yeah.
That should be when we get the preview version of Moment 5 on stable. That's my guess. And that it's going to be what we have in the release.
I love that want to predict this, right? Like, because that always goes so well.
They will beat this out of me. We're getting close. But based on the past, which is no basis for anything anymore, because that's, you know, again, this is the, what did I call it? The Crayola and coloring book part of Microsoft. you know, there's no rules. So there you go.
All things are possible. Some of them are even likely.
So that's Windows. Not too much. I was kind of hoping, honestly, today we'd see some more builds. I guess it could still happen, but if not today, probably tomorrow. You know, we'll see what happens there.
Right.
And then Xbox, not as momentous as it was the last time, but they have a new set of games for Game Pass across all the platforms. Remember last month, there were a couple of really cool looking games. Mm-hmm. Hell Hath No Fury,
And we still haven't seen Activision Blizzard at all yet.
No, and we are not seeing it in this list. I guess I'm thinking we're not going to see it this month. That's got to be a standalone big.
Got to be a year away, I think.
Oh, God, it better not be that
far. It's got to take a while.
Last 2 weeks ago, I should say, there were a bunch of games in there I thought were very interesting. I look at this list and I'm like, I don't even recognize most of these. And I'm kind of back to that. But again,
Brotato. I can't wait to play
Brotato.
Brotato.
You're a Brotato.
Persona 3 is great.
Okay. Kevin says Persona. Our producer says Persona.
It's a remake of a 2006 game.
It looks kind of anime-ish. Yeah,
like a first person thing?
It's got a whole anime storyline to it.
By day, killing demons by night.
Oh, Lord.
It sounds like a CW show with
you had a problem with killing. Yeah, you had a problem with killing demons. Come on,
I love it that the F1 game does not, in fact, have this year's F1 champion and last year's F1 champion. Apparently, Max Verstappen was so expensive they couldn't buy his image.
Oh, okay. I was like, I'm confused that you even know anything about that.
I know, it's surprising. I know, I'm full of them.
It's disappointing, frankly.
I'm an F1 fan. We went to Las Vegas to watch the race.
I like to watch things go in circles.
You don't even get to see the circle.
If you were a baby and you had that little mobile thing over your head and you never got over it, you're an F1 fan.
It's not even that good. They're going so fast, and you see so, because it's a street track, you see so little of the track.
You're just waiting for the crash. That's why. It's all
No, we even saw kind of a crash, but it wasn't. Yeah. Boom! They're so fast. Right.
It's easier to watch races. Those races on TV, right?
Football, it's fun to be there. Yeah. I wouldn't do it again, but it was fun for the.
Yeah, it's two at once.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah, once. It's a big commitment.
It's a big financial commitment.
That's right.
Jeez, Louise! I bought it more than a year ago, or.
In the early bird.
So many Patriots games. And finally, one of my friends said, you know, they're not going to win any more games. And like, why don't we just be warm and be inside and have food and drinks?
Yeah.
You know, inside like human beings, you know? Okay. Anyway, Activision Blizzard waiting on that. Baldur's Gate 3, I think it was the biggest game of last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Same bug.
Big bug on Xbox. Same bug too. Not a fun bug, but saves were disappearing.
Oh dear.
There is an Xbox system update that has rolled out that will address that.
So it's actually an OS level problem then, yep. Not the game. Interesting.
I know.
How long did that take to diagnose? A year?
It took actually a while. They've been complaining about this for a couple of months, I think.
Yeah.
I don't. The problem. Let's see. Can he recover? I don't know. I don't know if you lost saves. I don't know. You can get them back.
Yeah, they're gone. Apparently, they're gone.
Yeah, I think they're gone.
That doesn't surprise me.
Right. So Ubisoft has made some changes to Ubisoft Plus, and I just briefly want to take a slight segue here and mention that I saw a headline that said something like Ubisoft tries to convince people that not owning things is okay. And it's like, guys,
you didn't really want that game, did you?
No, but I mean, like, we've been using subscription services for music, videos, I mean, everything, office productivity software for years and years. This is not new. No, I mean, we just talked about Apple Arcade, you know.
Sure.
That's a little unfair, but Ubisoft does have something called Ubisoft Plus, which is their kind of tier. So they've kind of segmented it out. So now they have something called Ubisoft Plus Classics for PC users only. It's only $7.99 a month, but it's kind of all their legacy games everyone knows and loves, like Far Cry 6, Rainbow Six, Watch Dogs, all that stuff. This is kind of a neat little, I think people can, I don't know, there's probably a word for this, but where you kind of swoop in, you're like, I'm just going to pay for this like a month, maybe two, so I can play this game or this handful of games, I'm done, you know? And maybe in a few years I want to do that again, maybe not. But I think that kind of thing is kind of neat. And then they have the full-blown service, Ubisoft Plus Premium, which is like $17.99 a month. And that's day one access to all of their games, you know, newest games, obviously. And I believe, it's included. I'm trying to make sure is this on Xbox as well? I believe, it is. Xbox. And actually on Amazon Luna, interestingly. That's kind of cross-platform, but more expensive. Ubisoft Plus to me is like the video game version of Paramount Plus, right? Like, am I that much of a fan of this one thing? Or do I just like games or TV, right?
It's kind of the tertiary RAN.
Yeah.
It's like nobody buys this for themselves. Our grandmother gets it because they didn't understand the words Netflix, right?
I get why these companies do it. But I mean, I don't know. EA Play, you could make a case because they're huge in sports, I guess.
Yeah. And that's why you buy it. It's for the sports games.
But EA Play is unique in that space. Ubisoft Plus, I mean, they do have some good games. I'm not dumping on them at all, but I mean.
No. But you're talking about leagues here. Like, where do you bat?
Yeah, right. Right. So to me, it's would you call it a tertiary service or whatever?
Yes.
Not a secondary. You're right. Yeah, that's probably, that's a good term. Yeah, tertiary service. What comes after tertiary?
Quaternary.
Quaternary.
That's
a tough word. Quaternary.
I don't know what comes after quaternary, though.
Quintinary? Yeah.
Quintinary. That sounds like a 15-year-old girl's birthday party thing where she wears a wedding dress.
Feliz quintenario.
Yeah.
Quintinary. All right. Let's take a break. And when we come back, back of the book. Yes.
Yeah.
We'll get you out of here in time. It's really down to you and whiskey, so I think we're okay.
Yep. I want to make sure he has. I have
45 minutes on whiskey for sure.
No. Well, you know, if Paul has to leave, you can keep talking. Paul,
I'll just keep going. I think the record was the barreling piece, and we're not going to go that long ago. That was 35 minutes. I thought Kevin was going to have a coronary.
I did feel bad last week. I think it was last week.
I'll be quick. Before we go on, though, you're the back of the book coming up in just a bit. I do want to give a little plug for us. Go, yay, team. If you like the programming you're listening to right now, if you want more of that, if you want to keep up with that, what's happening in AI, what's happening with Microsoft, Apple, Google, the internet, security, you're a candidate for a Club Twit because Twit is all about keeping you up to date on what's happening in the world of technology so that you can be an informed user. You can create something new. You can protect yourself.
And I think this is going to be a big year. This is going to be a very interesting year. So I want to invite you to join Club Twit. What do you get? Well, besides the warm and fuzzy feeling that you're helping us out at Twit, you also get all of our shows ad-free. You get members-only shows like Paul's Hands-On Windows, Mac is covered with Michael Sargent's Hands-On Mac. There's Home Theater Geeks. iOS Today is now in the club only. The Untitled Linux Show. You also get a bonus feed that includes outtakes, behind-the-scenes content. You get access to our Discord, which is a great hang even when the shows aren't on. And you can watch a live feed of the shows being produced. All of that for $7 a month. But again, the main reason, I mean, we wanted to give you some real benefits, but the main reason to do it is because you like what you hear and you want to support it. There are monthly plans, there are yearly plans, there are family plans and corporate plans. And I, you know, you can occasionally I hear from people saying, well, seven is not enough. Why don't you charge more? We don't want to charge more, but if you want to give more, you can. In the process, you'll see you can increase that to $10 a month if you feel like it or more. But really, all we ask is $7 a month. And if we can get, it is our goal by the end of the quarter to get to about 5% of our audience participating. That's not an outrageous amount. Public radio, public broadcasting is more like 10%. I think we're worth it, don't you? So please, twit.tv/clubtwit. Also, I should mention while you're there, the survey is ongoing through the end of the month. Last chance to take it in the next couple of weeks. twit.tv/survey24. Just takes a minute or two. But that helps us understand our audience better. And we want to make sure every show gets represented. So Windows Weekly listeners, make sure you take the Twit audience survey at twit.tv/survey24. All right. I'm not going to, no more begging. Let's continue on with the back of the book, Paul Thurrotta and his tip of the week. Paul?
I would pay for like a half-life service.
We have, I'll tell you what we have. We have a two different Minecraft servers that Club Twit members get to play on. One was originally built years ago by OMG
Chad. OMG Chad.
With a bunch of listeners and users. And it really is a replication of Twit. The whole studio's there and everything. It's really cool. And then we have a really hard survival server. But people are good at Minecraft.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Anyway,
quickly
what's your
transitioning
tip?
To only playing old games?
That's I think old thing. Games are the best.
Yeah. I'm just going to read Call books that were already written.
Call of Duty's an old game.
It sure is.
Been around a long time.
Yep. So we talked up front about some of this crazy insurification stuff. And a couple of years ago, maybe 18 months ago, I kind of freaked out when I was seeing all these pop-up ads and mobile nonsense, like for services I was paying for. And I finally said, I can't do this anymore. And I started using something called NextDNS on my mobile devices only, not on my PCs. And it's worked well enough that I actually convinced my wife to use it. And as you two have both, I think, mentioned on this very show, you run into these issues with this type of solution where they come down and they're like, I click on this thing and it breaks, fix it. You know, so there is a little bit of maintenance to this. And if you want to block like the tracking that occurs through, whether it's the new Outlook or, you know, on the web, whatever, these types of solutions, whether it's NextDNS or something else are, Pile. You know, are one way, a pile, yes, one way to do this. So the thing you need to understand is that you're going to have problems. And that you need to be technical enough to kind of try to solve them. So
you got to learn the tool.
Yeah. The thing I'm experimenting right now is because I say I pay for Microsoft 365. So when I run the new Outlook, I don't see anything. Right. But I have other accounts. So I've set up NextDNS on three computers now, two of which are not my Microsoft account. Just to kind of test that and see what that experience is like and what do I have to kind of work around. I've noticed things on my phone. I mean, there's certain things like, I think it's the Google Discovery feed, certain links, because they go through like a third, a Google service. You're not clicking on a URL. You're clicking on a URL that transfers to another URL. You actually never get to the story because, you know, that's one thing that NextDNS is preventing, right? So you got to kind of figure that out. It's a little bit difficult. So like I said up front, this is not a solvable problem per se, unless you don't care about the rest of the world at all, in which case then you're all set, I guess.
You know, if you don't go on the internet, they can't serve you ads.
The most secure computer in the world is not connected to the internet. Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's that. I guess what the tip, such as it is that if you're bothered by this behavior you're seeing in the new Outlook in particular, I think it would behoove everybody to do a little bit of research and kind of experiment on these types of solutions, Nextiness or Pi-hole being two of the big ones. I think I pay for Nextiness, if I'm not mistaken, but it's not
cheap.
Very much.
It's cheap. You can use it. I think you get 300,000 queries a month, but if that's not enough, like, you can pay 99 cents. It's really, really cheap.
Yeah,
this, it's nextdns.io, and it's, you know what, you can, the way I solve this is you can put it on individual machines, you can block the whole household.
Right. You can put it on your router. Right. So
initially I had it on the router. It's not software. I'm just redirecting your DNS.
Yeah.
But you can put it, you can have individual machines use it. So I use it all the time.
The reason I put it on mobile devices
and it's
first
great for mobile.
And then kept them there is because of you run apps.
You have
right?
to. Yeah.
When you're on a PC or probably a Mac, a lot of what you do is happening through a web browser and we have anti-tracking, ad blocking in those programs, right? So because I didn't want to break everything everywhere, I didn't ever put, well, also I had a Google Wi-Fi system that didn't support it, but now I have an Eero one that does. So I could do that, but I need to figure it out first and then maybe I won't even take that step. We'll see. But anyway, I'm experimenting and I recommend that you do as well.
Yeah. Where the Pi-hole kitty came big was for the TV because the TV has a built-in Roku, but also the TV sends a ton of telemetry.
That's right.
About what you're watching.
Oh, they're the worst.
Yeah, and generally speaking, I just don't plug them in. But in this case, you need to, or the TV doesn't work.
A Roku TV in Mexico. I hate it so much. I put an Apple TV on it so I can just kind of bypass it when it comes on. But it's still, the worst. Roku, I hate the Roku.
And this is where I'm saying, like, we can fix this for you with a Pi-hole and set it up in there.
You got to do a little bit of,
But you do have to do some care and feeding. There's no two ways around it. Like,
that's right.
Nothing else you can do.
That's right. I this is not something I could hand off to a main, like my wife would say, you'll be fine. Yeah, you won't be fine. No. You know, it's a little more complicated.
Well, you'd have to teach it. Like, it's solvable. It's just, first is the instinct to diagnose. What's going on here? Why is this working? Is the internet down? Like, there's lots of possibilities. Yeah,
that's exactly right.
Right. You've got to go, oh, wait, it's being interpreted as a ad or a tracker. And so it's being eliminated.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get there.
No,
well, maybe we're on. It's going to be, it's the forever war, really. But hopefully you get into a place. Yeah. You get into a place where you kind of understand what the problem is and can know how to solve it at least. And then the app pick is, it's one I picked this several times, but I've been using Brave full time as my browser, mobile and desktop for not quite 2 years, but close to that. And, I still recommend it for people who care about privacy and security. There's literally no better choice. There is one little Achilles heel with the browser though, and it's not Brendan Eich. It's that, you can argue that one, but, they don't use the password, they don't do autofill on mobile. And this has been a known Yes.
That's weird.
I know. And by the way, the only reason I ever went to a standalone password manager, I do use Bitwarden, is because of this, right? Because otherwise I just use Brave. I trust it. Like it's such a great browser, but I don't want like two copies of my password, you know, database out in the world. Like that I have to then maintain, right. Or keep up, you know, sync somehow. So they've been actively working on this for at least 3 years. People complain about it all the time. It's the one thing they've been kind of tone deaf on. I saw one really idgety response from someone who worked at Brave who was just getting mad about all the questions about it. It's like, we're working on it. Shut up. You know, it's like, okay, but it's been years. And then because we talked about Bitwarden and passkeys and password managers last week, I finally published my article, right? The non-controversial, not me advising you should do this, but just kind of explaining the problem. And what I discovered, and by the way, Richard, I never told you this. I'm so sorry. You were 100% right that the security goons who work for Bitwarden have no idea how to make UI. And what I eventually discovered is that 2 to 3 weeks of me banging my head repeatedly, trying to get this thing to work the same way on multiple computers was not me. It's because sometimes this thing just doesn't work. Like I'm not kidding.
And so it's not just it is badly described. It's that it's
badly.
You're talking passkeys on Bitwarden.
No, I'm talking, this is what I'm talking. Sorry. One of the things we talked about last week was this notion of what I want to do is make this as seamless as possible.
Bitwarden passkeys just added this, passwordless login.
Yeah. I'm going to get to that one. It's not passkey. That, okay. This is, I'm just, this is, that's,
you're saying kind of Bitwarden doesn't work on some of your systems.
It doesn't work consistently on any of my systems. So here's the problem.
You have some weird thing going on.
No, I don't.
It works great on
No, I don't. I've used this with multiple user accounts, let me explain what it is, and then I think you'll understand. What I want is sign in with Windows Hello biometrics, right?
You
have to install and configure the desktop app. Hold on a second. Let me just explain it. And otherwise, I don't want to type a master password. So I get that I can't have passkeys yet, but I want to use Windows Hello. That's the next best thing. It's still passwordless. What happens is you go to the extension and you say, turn it on. It says you have to turn it on first in the desktop app. And you're like, I did. So you go to the desktop app and you turn it off, turn it on, click save, go over here. And then it says waiting for the response from the desktop app. Never comes. And then you go, turn it on, turn it off. So every PC is a little differently. I literally have one PC that I've never gotten it to work on. But what I found for the most part is if you keep trying, let it fail. Eventually you'll get through. I spent 2.5 weeks to 3 weeks trying to figure this out. It's not me. It's Bitwarden is just terribly written. So that's where I'm at. And that's why I'm insane. But anyway, the day I published this, I stressed over this for 3 weeks, sat down in front of the TV, looked at my phone, and it said, Bitwarden adds passkey support. And I'm like, oh, come on. And so
they've had passkey support for a long time. They added it for your password.
There are two sides to passkeys. You can save passkey. What I'm talking about is use a passkey to sign into Bitwarden, right?
Right.
Single sign-on. All right. Passwordless sign-on. So then I looked at the story, and actually they only added it to the web client. So it doesn't help you on a computer or a device. Although on a device, as everyone knows, it works much better. That biometric thing is completely usable. Works great on mobile. So it wasn't what I asked for, but it was the weirdest coincidence. I'm like, I'm going to put this behind me. Yeah. I'm going to put this out in the world. I feel good about it. Bitwarden has passkey.
I saw it. I knew.
Are you kidding me?
This was literally after your tirade on Wednesday.
Yes.
They came out with it. It was so funny.
But it's not. It isn't what I was looking for. It's only on the web client. So
it doesn't do it in your browser.
No, there is no way to sign into Bitwarden in the browser or the desktop client with passkeys right now. But it's coming. It is coming. This is the first step. They did it in the web client.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't come up for me because I use biometrics because I'm not using Windows.
And by the way, I meant to say you were talking about looked at it on the Mac, and the one thing I'd kind of forgotten about that it may be tied to this. We were talking about 4-digit versus 6-digit pins and blah 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 whatever. You were saying like the one thing about the Mac that's very different from Windows that I think people need to understand is that the Mac uses the system for sign-in that we had in Windows 7 and older, where you always sign in with a local account that you created specific to that device and hopefully added a password that was hopefully specific to that device. In Windows 7, they added the ability to connect a Microsoft account, which was then called a passkey account, to that local account, right? So you could get the benefit of the authentication pass-through capabilities, like in the browser or whatever. But in Windows today, most individuals, almost all of them, and many business users, or most business users too, actually sign in with an online account, right? It's not a local account.
Right.
I wonder sometimes, and because Apple uses the same system on their other devices, if there isn't something about that makes, because if you signed into a local account in Windows, added a password, and then protected it with Windows Hello, that actually works fine. It's just there's something about the online account that screws up this whole system. And that's true of things like accessing a network share on a different computer in your home network, using remote desktop. There's something about those online accounts, Microsoft accounts and Microsoft Work and School accounts. I promise, Richard. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Richard. I'll just shut up. Let's move on.
You'll be fine.
Sorry.
Everything's fine.
I just said, Richard, I'm not going to take up all the time. And then I kept talking. So sorry.
It's going to be fine.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Run as Radio.
This week's Run as Radio, April Dunham back for her third visit. Originally an independent, now she is a blue badge. She's a cloud advocate on the Power Platform, which is what she's always talked about. So we spent over 30 minutes just talking about all the co-pilots in the Power Platform space now. We went over three of them. There's one for Power Apps. There's one for Power BI. There's one for Power Automate. Apps is this, heterogeneous client builder tool. And this idea that you could actually add You can use Copilot to build the app, and you can add Copilot to the app. So rather than trying to build interfaces for everything, just let them chat to it and then render what they're asking for. And Power BI, of course, is on the analytics side. So there's lots to describe there rather than try and slice and dice your way through a lot of things. And the Power Automate one, this is the one where you can build automations inside of your normal workflows. So adding a Copilot, it's got more of a GitHub Copilot feel to it that it's helping you write the automation, which is pretty compelling. Yeah, can't get away from it. It's everywhere, but it's interesting to see them expanding in that space. I always wondered how many of these Copilots are actually going to see the light of day, but and it turns out it's going to be more than you think. There's three more. And that's what we did on RunAs.
Wow. All right. There it is in all its glory. RunAs Radio. Now, how about some whiskey?
did we a bunch of Scottish the past few weeks, and I had to do a Canadian last week just to be a variation. So let's go a little Irish today for fun. And I picked an odd one that's called, known as Writer's Tears. Now then, this is a reference to this idea. I mean, I always think of James Joyce in this scenario. This famously slow writer, like it took him 8 years to write Ulysses. Admittedly, 260,000 words, like 900 pages. So, and that when frustrated from writer's block or whatever it may be, you've got all these famous Irish writers like Sam Beckett, Yeats, Oscar Wilde, so what, they'd all drink whiskey to the point where that their tears were actually whiskey flavored. I mean, it's ridiculous. There are cocktails called writer's block too. There's a bunch of different ones. There's one that's like half Amaretto, half bourbon with some lemon juice and bitters. There was one with pineapple juice. Let's not talk about that. What's interesting about Writer's Tears is that it is a new whiskey from a new distiller. So this is Bernard and Rosemary Walsh, who formed a company called Walsh Distillery. Now, and they only formed that back in 99. Bernard Walsh has a long history in whiskey in Ireland, and it was well known. But they actually started out making an Irish coffee liqueur called the Hot Irishman. This is before they really had a distillery per se. We were basically ordering it from other distilleries and bottling it. They did then get into doing that with regular whiskey. Their first whiskey was called the Irishman, as opposed to the Hot Irishman. And in 2009, they made Writer's Tears. Now, at this point, they did not have a distillery. They are what is known as a non-distilling producer, or an NDP. And which is to say that they go to various sources to do this. Now, this is not that different from what we talked about last week with Bareface, because Bareface, those guys ordered a 7-year-old bourbon made with 100% corn, right, from another provider. And then they did some additional aging. They did some time in wine cask and then some time in the virgin Hungarian oak. And then they ship it over to a bottler. The Walsh shut up. They don't even do that much. They're taking it from two different distilleries, having it delivered to a third place where it's barreled and aged and then bottled and shipped out. I don't know that they touch it at all. Interestingly, adjacent to this, they did start building a distillery in about 2013, it was operational by 2016. But to finance it, the 50% owner was Ilva Saronno. Those are the guys who make Tia Maria and Di Saronno. And within a year or two of operations, they were fighting tooth and nail. By 2019, they went separate ways, which is to say Saronno got the distillery. They renamed it the Royal Oak Distillery. It makes a line of whiskeys you've never heard of called the Buskers, which are sold only internationally. Actually, they're not really sold in Ireland. And the funny part is when you read the website, like if you don't get all these bits and pieces, it seems like they make whiskey when really what they're doing is they're contracting out. That being said, last year they broke ground on another distillery with the intent to make Writer's Tears themselves because it has been their hit. And so they've made a lot of variations on it using a bunch of different distilleries, and they want to change it again, which is going to mean that you'll never know what kind of versions of Writer's Tears you're actually going to get. The original Writer's Tears, the one from 2009, is what's known as a vatted whiskey. And we talked about these terms before, but that is to say it is a combination of different styles of whiskey. It's not a blend, because a blend always has grain alcohol in it, typically made with corn. To lower its costs, you just add alcohol that way. This vatted whiskey, Writer's Tears, is 100% barley, which is not all that common. The Irish like playing with their mash bills. They like a little corn, a little rye, a little wheat. They go kind of nuts. But this is pure barley. In Writer's Tier specifically, they use a 40% triple distilled single malt, likely from the Cooley Distillery. They keep it a secret. Then they also have 60% a triple distilled pot still whiskey from Middleton, which is where they do a lot of their production work. Now, this is the same recipe as the Irishman, but the Irishman was 30% pot and 70% malt. And they come out to about the same price. They do, of course, refer to it as a super premium whiskey. To be clear, this is a vatted whiskey. That's not a bad thing, but it's worth about $20 a bottle, and they sell it for $40 because they do spend a lot on marketing and sort of positional things. And if you drink it, it's pretty good. Yeah. You know, it's all right. It's nothing.
It's okay.
It's okay. But if you're going to spend $40 on a 40% whiskey, spend $45 and buy a Redbreast 12.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I like Redbreast.
It's just a great whiskey.
I bought some for a friend over Christmas, actually. Yeah.
If you just want to, you can get a middling whiskey like this in a $20 range. Easy enough. Get a bottle of Jameson. And again, I'm not going to just say anything bad about Jameson. Get the Blackbush. Good whiskey and cheap. Yes. Inexpensive, very drinkable all day long. This is in a funny spot. It's got, you know what's got going for it? A good name and some good photos.
The thing that bugs me, I've had it.
Yeah. Writer's Tears.
Absolutely. Right. I've had bottles of it. No question.
It's not
about
a name
it.
You'd forget very quickly.
Right. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, it seemed like it was custom made.
Especially as a writer. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it goes here, right? It's got that name. It's got a name. It's got a style. It's got a finesse to it. But I swear to God, $12 that bottle is marketing. At least. Really.
Well, you know, I am here visiting my mom, and she yesterday said, bring me bourbon. And
Which way did you go?
Well, she wanted Jim Beam. And she says, get me the one with a handle. So
I would like a jug of bourbon.
The 1.15.
Did she play a song on it after?
So I went to Bottles, which is the liquor store over here, and they have
whiskeys. You might have a Yankee Spirits in your area. Those are fantastic stores in that area.
The Bottles was great. They had all the whiskeys that Richard's. I mean, there was Angel's Envy. There was all kinds of great stuff. Yep. But I couldn't find the Jim Beam. And I said, where's the Jim Beam? And she said, oh, it's over here. I said, well, do you have one with a handle? She said, this is the East Side. We don't have Jim Beam handles.
I love it. I love that it got that local. This is in Massachusetts,
I'm
you
sorry.
Jerk.
You might want to go to Massachusetts, that is my friend.
You got to cross the waterway to find a jug. That's hilarious.
Probably just as well. I don't think my mom should really be having a handle.
But we have wild turkey by the gallon.
Yeah, I bet they, well,
that's,
maybe.
That's really funny.
So Beam's okay?
Great.
I wanted to get her something better. Okay. I wanted to get her some Angel's Envy.
Crown Royal would be
Yeah, Maker's Mark.
Not Crown Royal. Get her Maker's Mark.
Maker's Mark, they had a big bottle of that. They had a bottle of Knob Creek. They had some good stuff.
Yeah, you're right. Listen, Beam's your classic well whiskey.
She wanted Beam.
It's fine. Yeah. No, nobody died for drinking Beam. Well,
she's 95 years old. If she wants Jim Beam, she's getting Jim Beam.
But you know, you get a Mark's a nice bottle. Like, it's a lovely drink.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I don't want to get her. Well, I don't want to encourage it, to be honest with you, but she, you know.
So the trick is to give her a taste of more expensive whiskey, so she has to buy less.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm sure the doctors would say, what are you, crazy? Don't bring her whiskey. Right. But I think if you get to a certain age, you should have whatever the hell you want.
Of life.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Totally.
What are you trying to prove?
Right. You know, she likes 91.
How old is she? She won. It's done.
Yeah.
She's already won. The game's over.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's in the rear
view mirror. You know what? Have a drink. She likes her See's candy. Mm-hmm. So I always bring her a box of See's when I come out. And I'm sure the doctor would say, well, don't let her eat the whole box. I said, Mom, if you want to eat the whole box.
She's my mother, not my child. I do.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, eat the whole damn thing.
Yep.
What's it going to do? Kill you? It's fine.
Everything's going to have some fun while you're doing it.
You know what? It's so fun to see her. It's fun to come out.
That's great. That's awesome you're there again, brother.
Yeah.
That's
I love
she's declining, so.
You love the shutters.
Plantation blends.
Yeah, the shutters. Yeah. Like my plantation shutters.
I was very jealous.
A lot of mom's stuff behind me here. A lot of antiques.
Yeah.
I'm in New England, so it's got a bunch of oil lamps. Oh, yeah.
No, it looks like the inside of a Cracker Barrel restaurant.
Yeah, kind of. Paul Theroux is at Theroux.com. That's his website. If you're not a premium member yet, you're missing some of the best content ever. I mean, it's all great, but boy, he's got some good stuff under the premium label there. So join. And, of course, his books are at leanpub.com, including Windows Everywhere, which is kind of a history of Windows through its programming languages, and the field guide for Windows 11, also there. And, of course, Paul's here every Wednesday.
And apologies again to Richard. I can't stop talking. I have a problem.
You're a podcast host.
You're the one with the time limit, man. I would have just stayed in.
Sorry. I think we made it.
I know.
I meant four minutes. You can get out of here in four minutes.
We're sliding in hot for sure.
Yeah, sliding in hot. Sorry. Richard Campbell, he is at runisradio.com. That's where Run His Radio, his podcast is, as well as .NET Rocks. Every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, we do Windows Weekly. You can watch us do it live on youtube.com/twit. We go live when the show goes live. Of course, club members get to watch before and after as well. If you're not a club member, please join twit.tv/clubtwit. After the fact, on-demand versions of the show here at the website, twit.tv/ww. There's also a YouTube channel dedicated to Windows Weekly. You can subscribe in your favorite podcast player. We invite you to do that. That way you'll get it automatically the minute it's available. Paul, Richard, have a wonderful week.
Thank you.
Stay warm. I know there's a lot of snow in both places.
Yep. Going to do another pass with the blower, I think.
What's the snow situation where you are?
He said we had almost a foot Tuesday night. Or no, I guess it was Monday night. And then it sleeted yesterday, and it got wet, and then it froze. All that good New England.
Oh, yeah. Crap. Welcome to New England.
It's crunchy. I learned a trick, though, and you probably already know this. I'm walking around, and I see everybody's windshield wipers sticking straight up.
Yeah.
Right. My sister said, yeah, so they don't freeze to the windshield. The
glass, you pull them off, and there's like still little bits of rubber on the glass. You're like, you're great.
Yeah.
So I used my scraper, scraped it off. Turned the car on, let the heat warm up, and it worked.
Nice.
So it's going to snow again, I think, on enough Friday, but it's pretty chill.
It's January. Like,
it's cold. It's cold. Yep. There hasn't been a lot of snow in this area. New York's first snowfall in 2 years.
Right. Yeah, but the year we had 6 feet of snow on the ground, it didn't snow until January 29th, I think. It was, yeah. So, you know, you can get fooled, and then it comes
in late.
Yeah. Going home Saturday night. Going to watch the football game on JetBlue and be home for the shows on Sunday. Thank you for being here, guys. We'll see you next week. All you winners and dozers on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Hey there, I'm Micah Sargent. Look, as a geek myself, I feel it's only fair if I admit something. We can be kind of hard to shop for. So what do you get for that geek in your life who has everything already? Well, a Club Twit gift subscription, of course. Twit podcasts keep them informed and entertained with the most relevant tech news podcasts available. With a Club Twit subscription, they're going to get access to all of our podcasts ad-free, exclusive outtakes, behind-the-scenes and special content, and, I love this, exclusive shows like my own Hands on Mac and Hands on Windows from Paul Theroux, as well as the Untitled Linux Show. So purchase your geek's gift at twit.tv/clubtwit, and they will thank you every day.